For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
He kept saying he kept getting bad starts. And if he just got a start, he would like beat me. Well, he did get a start and I pulled away from him, but I didn't want no excuses. Like I was like, all right, well, he can say like Sorby held him up or whatever. So like halfway through the race, I'm like, well, I'm a little halfway. I only got like 10 minutes to outrun him. I'm slowing down. So
yeah, I let him happen. Tagline, no excuses.
Yeah. And then, yeah, but it was always, it was nothing he did. Cause I didn't even talk to Chad. Like we never got any like, you know, me and Brownie had animosity. He took me out of the test track one time. Yeah. Sometimes I would make the thing stiff just to have feedback on there because I didn't like bikes that didn't have feedback. So I would make it stiff just so I can feel it in my hands, like on there. And so doing that, like people always like, oh, that's how you lose the front end. Well, that's one of the negatives to having it stiff. But
do you remember after Hansen won, we went to that club after and you were going to get in a fight with somebody? Was it?
I got hit by a bottle.
Yeah, you were going to get in a fight in this bar. And we had a concussion that night. We're like, we shouldn't be fighting anybody. We shouldn't even be in here.
I'm coming home. I'm coming home. Tell the world I'm coming.
I'm back where I belong. Yeah, I never felt so strong.
Hey guys, what's going on? It's your boy, James Stewart. We're here at the compound in our little studio. And this is a podcast, episode number 7. I got my boy Roger here. I got Cole.
Beach.
Yeah, Beach. I still remember his name, but episode 7. And I got a special guest. And it's kind of fitting that it's number 7. You guys will recognize this guy. I've been a fan of him before a long time, back when he worked at Kawasaki, when he worked with Emic. I thought he was the coolest mechanic with his glasses on, had the big number one plate on Kawasaki. And in end of 2001, I started working with him and our career began right there. So I want to introduce a good friend of mine, a guy who's basically molded my career, helped me become who I am today. And you guys are recognizing, so I want to introduce Jeremy Albrecht. We call him J-Bone. What's going on, man?
What's up? Happy to be here.
Yeah. No, thanks for coming down. I mean, when we started working together, it was 2001. You guys were trying to like hone me in Kawasaki. And then, truthfully, like you're one of the reasons I came to Kawasaki.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Never knew that.
So yeah.
You never told. This might be good. Learn some secrets
I'm
here.
I'm hiding it in.
Oh, we're going to learn a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll learn a lot of stuff we didn't know here.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you start thinking about, like, you know, when I knew you were coming on, and we've spoken since. We've had, you know.
Not a lot, though, to be honest.
I know. It's funny. Like, why?
I didn't know this till.
I why?
Honestly, like, when you left the JGR team.
Yeah.
It kind of went, it was going good,
yeah.
And then it went bad right at the end.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, you know what? Screw him then. If he wants to be like that, that's cool.
Yeah.
I got enough friends. I don't need any more.
Well, it was
but
hard.
Then I saw you at Red Bud.
Yeah, we saw you.
And I went and talked to you, and I'm like, I'm over it.
Yeah.
That was a long time. Like,
that was Red Bud 20.
20. We went 2020, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was when I was COVID. Working for Chase. Yeah.
So that was like 8 years that I haven't talked to you at all, which is not cool.
Yeah. I mean, especially like with us, like, I mean, again, like you're the reason I went to Kawasaki. I mean, honest with you. And I think for me, like the whole JGR thing, it was hard because like I was like, I knew how much we like worked and I knew like I mean, I was already on Yamaha before, like at L&M, and it was kind of the same thing. And we created this gas can, like this gas tank, and you guys are coming down here after the races on Saturday, driving down Sunday. And I think part of the reason like it got that way for me and I got quiet is because I felt bad. Like, I mean, to be honest with you, like I felt bad because it was like it's a tough position to be in. Like, I'm like, dude, I actually know I can't win on this bike. And the fact is, like, I mean, there was a lot of incentives, like the team. I loved everybody there. I actually liked being in North Carolina, and there was a career after racing in the NASCAR, and it was a ton of money. But like I knew like I couldn't win. And at that point it was like all I cared about, it was never the money. It was always about winning. And I'm like, you guys brought me here to win races. And it was just, it was tough. And I know for you guys, like thinking about it now, it almost seemed like I quit, because like it was our first year together. We didn't even make a full year, but it was my third year on that bike. And so, I mean, it was like, I already know where it was. So it was tough. And that's probably the reason why it got that way. So I could see the animosity, but it was never because of like I was, you know, upset at you guys. It was, I mean, honestly, it was partly embarrassing and not embarrassing, but I just felt bad. Like, and that's the truth. So I'm glad we met at Red Bull. 'Cause like we start talking and we're like,
I know, kind of, I mean, was like easy, huh?
It's, yeah. Like cool. I mean, why? Like, you know what I mean? It's not like there was something. And at the end of the day, like, I think we all realized like it was, you know, it was a no win situation we were in. And, you know, it's just, when you get those relationships, it just sucks. Like you get so invested in the people that you work with that, like, that's the part that hurts, you know, not being able to win on a bike. I mean, that was going to happen, but you know, I just felt bad for, I mean, everybody else that's working, you know? So, yeah. I mean, and it took a long time until this year for them to win on that thing. So, yeah, it's not like that, but yeah, it's good. And I was pumped to hear you when you, when Raj got you to come down and we asked you to come down, you were like, yeah, no problem. So that's,
yeah, that's awesome. I appreciate Coy, it. 'Cause I knew we ended it.
Yeah.
'Cause I still work there. So
I love Coy's, sure, cool. Coy's response was the best ever.
Yeah, Coy said, just tell him the truth. Tell him how bad that bike was. And really, sorry. I mean, for us, you know, we knew the Yamaha was tough back then, and we knew you wanted to ride a different brand.
Yeah.
And that's how we started talking, because we knew you wanted to ride a Suzuki.
Yeah.
So we thought we were going to do Suzuki. So it kind of was all looking like it was going to be great. And then last minute, Yamaha knew they were losing you and us. Yeah. And then they finally made an offer to Coy that he couldn't refuse. And then I remember having to call you and go, man, we're staying Yamaha. And
yeah.
Like, really?
Yeah.
And then you said, all right, bring it down here. 'Cause you didn't ride our bike yet.
Yeah.
So then that's when we brought our Yamaha down here so you could try it. And then you were saying how it felt wide. So Coy started cutting it up while we're here, like in the driveway.
Oh, here.
Yeah. Yeah, he started like modifying it and doing stuff. And we're like, you can't ride it after that. He goes, I just want to get him to sit on it, because if I can make anything. And he did. Like, we made this gas tank. We went home and scanned a Suzuki, because that's what you liked.
Yeah.
And we made the gas tank narrow, the shrouds we had custom made, the seat we made longer, like everything to make it feel the way it did. Like, we tried a lot.
Everything. But, I mean, everything. Dude, we were putting like, you know, pins in to stop the frame from flexing. And
well, maybe some of that's maybe taking shape now, because I think that Yamaha's
it's skinnier now because of that gas tank. Yeah. And then we go to the first race and I fall and the shroud comes off because of the gas tank, so you know Yamaha wasn't pumped on that.
Yeah,
first race was a struggle, but yeah, it that was the thing. Like, there was, and I actually kind of forgot about that until you brought it up, but it started off like that way. So even like going into it, like, it was like, all right, well, I'll come to you guys, and we were all going to Suzuki, you know, and switching it up. And then the last minute, then, you know, the Yamaha thing came up. And then obviously, as you know, back then, like the factories, they still might be that way today, but they were struggling trying to even get funding for the team. So if you can't get funding, then this whole thing's a wrap. You can't pay me, you can't pay the guys. And so I know Coy was in a tough position, because, like, you know, like, he knew where I wanted to go, but he also knew, like, you can't run a race team without them. And when you brought that bike down here, and I saw you guys doing that, and kind of the whole, like, you know, working with you again, working with Dean again, and being able to kind of do whatever we want, at least try, it was like, okay, maybe we can make this thing work. But it wasn't too long before, like, I knew, like, I'm like, damn, like, dude, like, it's,
and then
you're giving up a lot.
Pirelli tire thing. That,
yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah. It was a lot. Yeah.
We had a lot of change. And really, if we would have been starting fresh on that bike, I think it would have been easier. But you already had a bad, bad taste.
Yeah, I almost died like five times before then, you know?
Yeah, before we even got to GGR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
we only had nine lives. We're already on eight.
Yeah, we're on eight and a half already. But it was, you know, the biggest thing was it was everybody, you know, working. You know, that's the part like that killed me the worst. It was how much everybody cared and they worked. And again, it's not like I went to many places, you know, in my career that people didn't care, but this was different. Like, I mean, they were leaving their families and going to the race on Saturday. I mean, coming home, hey kids, bye, you know, going to the shop and then coming down here on Monday and we were testing. And that was the part that like hurt. But when I was sitting on that hay bale in Houston, yeah. I was like, I mean, you got to make a choice. Like, it's, you either die here, like, I mean, not literally, but literally,
yeah.
Or you got to tell these guys, because it was going to get to a point to where I was going to shut down. And like, I'm not going to go out here and like try to race. And I tried doing that actually at Houston. I think I was like at, you know, 13th in practice and all that. And then K-Dub came on the heat race and, you know, long story short, you know where that ended up at. Mm-hmm. So I knew I couldn't do that. And it ended up like I'm battling like in 10th and then I'm going down. And then, and the frustrating part was like, I don't even know how I did it. So, and then I told Patty, and I was like, hey, like, it's the last time we're on this bike. And you're like,
yeah, oh, yeah, that's right. Patty was. Right.
Yeah, he told us, and I'm like, ah, let's see.
Yeah.
And I'd go in there and talk to you, and you're in your motorhome. And you're like, yeah. And I'm like,
you know that look.
Yeah, I've seen that look.
Yeah.
And then, I thought it would fix itself from like Monday, Tuesday when we get home. I'm like,
sometimes it does. Yeah. I think, honestly, like I said, I think it's the buildup all the years before. And you did already come into it not wanting to ride that bike. We did all the, we learned as a team to never talk someone into it again.
Yeah.
Because we, if they don't want to come there, they don't like the bike or something, we can't talk them into it.
Yeah. It's like,
we kind of did. Like, we wanted you to do it so bad. Like, we did whatever it took.
Yeah.
So you'd tell us, hey, come down and bring that bike down here, and we'd drive down here and bring it.
Yeah.
And, all right. If you do this next time.
You can't help but wonder to think, what if it would have been Suzuki? What?
I mean, I think in hindsight, like, I mean, what was supposed to happen, it was supposed to happen. And, you know, it's one thing I don't regret. It's actually something that, like, it kind of find yourself as a person, like, because I even had to find myself and like, dude, how much you really like racing, you know, because like it, like the opportunity and the contract was there. I mean, I had my money and like I had a career after that. So I could have easily been like, all right, like,
let me mail this in. That's the biggest thing for me, what you walked away.
Yeah. And
yeah, people, you could have milked it.
And people, again, I'd probably still been up there. I'd have been the first Bubba Wallace, you know, I mean, like up there. And then when I went, Corey brought me up to a test and that little NASCAR thing. And I freaking loved that. So there was a lot of incentive. And then the people I was with, like, I enjoyed like that part, you know, so it was not just money. I walked away. It was a lot. And then the whole fan backlash and all that. But at that time, like, I was still wanting to like win. And, you know, and like you said, like the hardest part was, it's like being in a relationship, you do something, you cheat, whatnots. And like, they can say they forgive you, but if they truly forgive you, you know, that's the real thing. Cause otherwise, as soon as you do something that's a little shady, it comes back up. And then, you know, coming back in the situation and not really wanting to ride Yamaha and then having history, it was like, I snapped back into that. Like, dude, this is the same thing I was going through back then, just on a skinnier version with some nice people, new people, but I can't do this. So it was tough. It was tough. And, you know, for me, like, it was, you know, my whole career, like, if I don't know what to say, I don't say anything. And so I didn't really know what else to say. Like, I'm like, guys, like, I can't do it. And so it was tough for everybody, but I'm glad Corey's, when I've spoken to him, he's been cool. I mean, I think we all realize at this point, you know, you get over it. And then, you know, same thing for J-Bone, and, you know, we all wanted to make the thing happen, but, you know, hindsight, you know, we were in a tough situation. So,
yeah. And for me, just for the record, I was never mad at you for leaving. I was more hurt when you left, how it got after you left.
Yeah.
Only that, like, like it was going good. And he told me he wanted out. So I worked on it. Everything was great. And then your lawyer's gnarly. And then he made it. Yeah. He made it gnarly at the end. And then, so then that's when I'm like, this is not cool.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything great. I was happy when I did see you at Redbud.
Yeah.
I didn't like not talking to you, honestly, because we do have a lot of history together. So
yeah, I mean,
it's cool to be here right now talking about it all.
Yeah. Mark is like, I mean, I remember the whole police situation. Like, I mean, when I went through all that, like, he's definitely not the lawyer. He's the lawyer you want because he tells you the truth, but he's not the one that you're like, ah, like it might be okay. Cause he's like, nah, you did wrong. Like, you got lights on there. If you go to trial, you're going to go to jail. Like, on that. I'm like, All right. Like on there. So I could see why it got like that. And I remember being at Hangtown. You remember this? Like, we were sitting in the bus and we got a cease and the cease or whatever from Yamaha, basically saying, like, if you go out and ride, we're going to sue you. Like, this is at Hangtown. I don't even know if you even knew that. This is at Hangtown.
When you left our team, when you're on Suzuki?
This is the first race at Suzuki. Like, I already went through the testing. Like, I was at Hangtown.
That makes no sense.
Well, that's why I think
it was with us.
Yeah, it was from Yamaha, and it was like basically saying that you can't ride this motorcycle on there. We're like I'm here, like I'm here.
Oh, I know what made you mad that everything was cool, and then I went to Seattle Supercross, and you weren't coming because we already knew we were working to get out of the deal. And Moto Concepts had number 7 on their bike in their pits on a Honda.
I do remember that,
and I went up to Tony, and I'm like, dude, that's not cool. You're trying to get attention.
Yeah.
He's not coming here to ride that bike, and he's not riding for your team during Supercross. I said, he might do it outdoor. I'm not saying, but I know for a fact he's not riding for you until outdoors. And he goes, and I go, you're a Supercross only team, so he's not riding for you this year. And he's like, how do you know? I said, I know.
Yeah.
And I said, you're just trying to get attention. He goes, isn't that what this is all about? And I'm like, yeah, but not like that. You're like, something bad has happened to us and you're trying to make something good out of it for you. I said, that's just not cool. We kind of got into it. And then,
I remember that.
I was kind of pissed because I knew that James wasn't coming back to race.
I don't even really remember that.
You probably barely talked to him, but what I did is I did something that made you mad. I told a magazine, which Roger told me I'd say stuff too much, which I've heard it more than just him.
That's why I wanted him to come down.
Say the truth. So somebody asked me something like if you were coming to the race or something. And I said, he's not coming unless he's racing, which is what a comment that you would have always said to me. Like, you don't, cause you never went to a race just to sign autographs. Yeah. I don't think that's happened
ever.
I think maybe it happened at Redbud because you went to that race and you weren't racing. But I am only going if I'm signing autographs and I'm racing. I am not doing it. Just do that. So I said that comment, and that's what you got mad at me for. We're telling the truth because I said that, and you said that I shouldn't have said that. So like David, we had to write this whole letter to apologize, saying that I was wrong.
I think
I'd have to pull that letter up.
Yeah, you got
to
pull it up.
You might have been looking. He might have been searching for something.
I need to pull this letter up. I need to have this letter pull up because I told, because that's what your lawyer.
Text you?
No, like, you weren't involved. It was your lawyer.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like,
and he got all gnarly on me, and I'm like, all I did was say the truth. How did I get in trouble for saying the truth? That's usually my thing.
Yeah.
Which I'm not saying I always should say everything I say, but.
No, I think, I mean, honestly, I don't know why I would even get mad at that. I think probably. Because there was some backlash with Yamaha, and I don't even know if you guys were really into that.
Yeah, I never said anything.
And I know Mark, he probably was using that to like leverage Yamaha, like on there. Well, I mean, okay, they're up here discriminating his name, because that was one of the things when I said I was not racing because of Yamaha. That's when they got upset, and then I think Mark was probably using that because I mean, I don't really care. Like, that was the truth. And even with the Moto Concept thing, I remember. I mean, he called me like right afterwards, and I'm like, you don't like in my head, I'm like, if they can't fix it, there ain't no way in hell. Like, y'all fixing this thing. And, but he was always like, you know, you can ride whatever bike you want to ride, like on there, we blah, 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 and all this stuff. So it wasn't that. Like, I personally wasn't mad. I can't even think of a reason why I was on that. I can think of why Mark would want to, and that was probably use that for Yamaha, because there was some other stuff that was going behind the scene, and that kind of bummed me out with those guys, because I kept thinking in my head, I'm like, why would they want me to race? Like, I'm telling them I can't win. Like, it's you're gonna pay me all this money, and I'm like, dude, I cannot do it. And I'm like, why would they even want me to do it? So you know, I didn't understand.
But even now, part. Like what you, like people would be happy if you got third or fifth. I mean, you don't like it.
I'd be happy right now.
But,
yeah.
But like, that's the hard part is for you, you're used to winning all the time. So if you weren't winning, you felt like you weren't doing what you should be doing.
Yeah.
And for.
Yeah. Well, really, it was just the way I was wired. I mean, yeah. from that was the way I was raised. I mean, going back in the day, I mean, I think I can probably count on one hand how many amateur races I ever lost. And then going into pro, like, I mean, you know how my dad was, like, I mean, we were there to win. So I think
he gave me a trophy once because you got second at
San Diego.
He's mad at me. This is your trophy.
Like, I remember as an amateur, dude, he kicked one. He's like, leave that trophy there, Junior.
Yeah.
I'm like, but my bike broke. Like, it wasn't even my fault. And, you know, but that was just kind of how I was, you know, raised. So,
yeah, I agree. Good. Just riding around is not for you. I get that.
No.
But like for even for us, like that year was the year that Villopoto blew his knee out. So you can always go, like you were talking about earlier, this like wonder what if. Because if the first race you didn't fall over because you were third, no problem. Easy.
Where? At
Anaheim 1 when you were on our team.
Yeah, well.
You would have been no problem. You just fell over weird on some tabletop. Like all these crashes were typically not. Like you were almost crashing the whole time, you'd be like fine, and then everything would just at once, like out of nowhere. It was weird.
Yeah, Anaheim, I crashed. I ended up getting sixth that race.
But it would have been an easy podium if it wasn't for the crash.
From outside, looking out, struggling. I was struggling. But you know what it was?
For you were struggling.
Well, it wasn't that. It wasn't that I was struggling. It was the fact that, like what you said, like I didn't know when something was going to happen. And that's where, like, at Houston, it was the fact that, like, I'm like, I swear I hit this jump the same way and the thing ballooned. But I know why I struggled at Anaheim, because we were, Pirelli had those tires when they shut down the factory, created all these tires. And that tire particularly, it was good, but it was like wide and it felt like train tracks. So when normally Anaheim's kind of hard, and you know, slippery, but we got there, it was like wet and it had ruts on it.
Different,
so we kind of struggled doing practice, and we threw on the Dunlop.
We had a Bridgestone on the front too.
Yeah, like it was.
We tried everything.
Yeah, and then it became a big deal. So we ended up racing with Pirelli like that night. Like, and I just remember like coming in that rut, and the thing, like if I wasn't like, if I didn't stay up, like leaned over, it would stand me up and it would shoot wherever I was going. And then, so I just jumped in the hay bales. Like it was like the thing was stuck on train track. So that's why I struggled that race. And it was like, you know, she just had some stupid falls. And then, so it was, you had that part. And then Pirelli, they actually got to a point where the tire got pretty good. Like, I mean, they were trying their best, but you can only build a new compound structure, new tire, like so quickly in like December.
I mean, they were sending tons.
They did.
Yeah, they would do it weekly. Yeah. Like, they would do it in a few days.
Dude,
like, they were unbelievable on that part. Like they'd fly them over. And
the factory was in Brazil.
I mean, I'll tell you this. Like I've never had a team with JGR like that ever worked, not even as close as like you guys did. I mean, it was past like, I mean, from Pirelli, like, you know, basically shutting down the factory to what you guys are doing. Like, that's why I think even if leaving Kawasaki or even leaving the L&M, it wouldn't have been that hard because, I mean, we all tried and there's only a certain amount. Like, it's a factory team. You know, if Japan doesn't do it, like, you can only do so much. But, I mean, these guys are really doing way more than, like, they had to. So that was the hardest part, like, because, like, you're not walking away from just – a bike, you're walking away from people and
who are willing to do whatever. That
willing to do everything. And I'm like, you know, again, like I was to the point where I actually felt like I was doing something noble, like in the sense of I'm like, all right guys, like I know it sucks, but I can't do it. So I mean, you can work all you want, but like I don't feel like I can win on this. And now it's getting to a point where I feel like it's dangerous to me. And so if that's the case, then like I'm going to shut down. And knowing myself, I can never do that. Like I'm still a racer. So if I go out on that track, I'm going to end up like, I just like sitting on this hay bale again. And that's not fair to anybody because it ruins Yamaha because we went from winning and then all I do is crash. And like, these guys are still going to continue to work all week long. Coy's spending all this money and on the race team and doing all this stuff. And I know, like, I mean, it's pointless at that point. So at some point it was going to come to a head where it was just going to end badly, like, for everybody. And, you know, so I was like, dude, like, I got to walk away from all this money. I don't care, but, like, I can't win. And so you guys actually took it differently than I thought you would, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually thought, like, they would somewhat understand. But, you know, thinking about it now, like, I didn't consider the fact that, like, we were still in the first year. And you know, I think Coy, you know.
Coy took it good, actually. He wasn't mad about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no.
Because the way we could accept it is he was paying his own money. So he was going in the hole. I mean, honestly.
I don't think he cared.
He was going to lose. He didn't. He was willing to. He wanted to win that bad. Yeah. And he liked it.
Yeah.
And I think the money didn't matter to him at that time. And I think even though we tried it and we failed, it did.
We step
us
fail.
Up. Yeah, like, it stepped us fail. Up that we want that. And it made us all learn a lot as a team because yeah. we tried stuff. We tried so much stuff, like yeah. stuff that we think there's no way this is going to work.
But yeah.
We got to try it anyway because James yeah. had this idea.
Yeah.
Like, you remember we tried these heavy axles?
I was trying to keep solid? That bike on the ground. Yeah, I was trying to figure out.
And it wasn't terrible. Like, mm-hmm. it's the opposite of what anyone would do. But we're like, hey,
yeah.
we made stuff you never tried. Well, like, we tried triple clamps we sent down.
Yeah.
Linkages.
Yeah, I was trying to get everything to get weight on both ends because that's what that Yamaha was. They put everything in the middle. So if you start thinking about it, putting a heavy axle on the front back, like I'm doing is spreading that weight back.
We did.
Oh, we tried everything.
And then we did, actually that worked pretty good. And then we tried Moose in the back, which deadened the feel. Mm-hmm. That helped a lot.
Yeah.
How did you like riding with that?
I mean, it everything
was actually good.
Yeah, everything was a Band-Aid. But I will tell you yeah. one thing. If it wasn't for the fact that I already like basically committed to where I was like, I've shut my mind off, I can't race. There was one thing that actually worked. And if we would have figured this out before I went to Houston, like maybe things would have been different. It was the steering stabilizer. It was the stabilizer. That was the one thing that I was like, all right, this thing can help.
Because having it or not having it?
Having it on there, we end up putting it. I think we were trying to do it.
It was a Honda one.
Yeah, it was a Honda one. And
I think we weren't allowed to do it at yeah. first. Yamaha wouldn't let us do it, but yeah. we ended up doing it anyway.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, we just did it. Like, I was like convinced him somehow. I'm like, just put it on. Let me just try.
But you didn't have it on in Houston.
No, I think we just got it, like, or whatever, because we were still. At that point, like, I'm like, hey, I'm not racing. I can't do this anymore. But I think we just got an outdoor bike or something. And I remember riding the Yamaha one more time before I actually was like done. And this was after Houston. I was like, you know, I'm not racing anymore. Went through all the stuff. And the bike was down here and it had a stabilizer, or maybe Dave put it on or whatever. But I rode with it. And I was like, dude, all right, maybe. But at that time, it was. I already like committed, told him, and I don't even know if I really even told you guys about that. Yeah, I think it was Dave that put it on. We were already committed to rides. I was already done, and I'm like, all right, like, well, maybe we can do the Suzuki, but let's put the stabilizer on. We have it, and yeah, I rode with it on the outdoors, and I was like, all right, but yeah, it was already past that point. So yeah, I forgot about it. You learn stuff new all the time. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah.
But yeah, again, like Coy was, he wanted to win. And I think, like, you know, just being from his background with Coach Gibbs and, you know, just knowing the whole football and just, you know, if you're able to do it and you decide not to, it's somewhat quitting, you know? And so I think probably the same way, we probably had the same mindset on certain things. Like, look, as many times I race hurt, I should have been there, like, you know, when I hurt my foot, when Preston hit me, when Reed took me off the track, I shouldn't have been racing up there in Vancouver. My foot was huge, but I'm like, well, I can somewhat ride. I can't walk, but I can ride. And it was just always about like fighting. So I think part of like his frustration and probably what bummed him out is he probably saw it a little bit as quitting, just because, I mean, we kept trying, stuff. And, you know, it was just tough. So it was, now looking at it again, I think we all understand. But yeah, I think that was, it was tough. And everybody shut down for different reasons. And then, you know, it's like anything, like, well, if you don't call me, I don't call you. And then that just kind of continued to happen. But I think the one thing also that got to me was Coach Gibbs. You know, like, you, it was a weird situation. Like, as much respect as I have for him, I still have for him, excuse me. I think he was always like, what do you say? He
recruit. Yeah, he definitely is a recruiter. Like, he wanted us, like, if it wasn't Coy's team and it was his team, we would have been spending a lot of money buying people stuff to try to get him to come to the team. Like, he loves that part of it, because I think it reminds him of football.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But he's all about it. Yeah. Like, flying down.
Yeah.
You know, if it was up to him, we would have bought you the car you want. We would have did everything the way you want, and he would have made it happen.
What car? Yeah. Well, I think that was the thing. Like, so when we were recruiting standpoint, like, even when I signed, he took me down to the golf course, his plane and stuff. And we were talking like every day, like, and he was always, inspirational, just kind of like, you know, just a good person. And I remember like calling him and telling him, because I wanted to call him and say, hey, like, you know, I appreciate everything. And like, he never called me back. And I'm like, dude, we went from like family, like really quick. And then like, I'm like, it just got clipped. And I don't think I even talked to him like since then. And so that was another thing that kind of just reminded me of somewhat the industry a little bit, like how you know, just how things were. So it was tough. And so that bummed me out. But again, it wasn't what anybody was doing. And I think just at the end of the day, everybody was just disappointed that we couldn't make it work. And, we wanted to try. But
yeah. That's what it was. It definitely didn't end how we all thought it would. But.
No.
We gave it a try. I remember our guys, we'd leave at midnight to drive down here.
Dude, I was
get here by 8 a.m, test all day, and then drive home. And I did the driving both ways because they would complain. So I didn't want to have those guys complain that they had to drive at night. So,
and this was Sunday.
Do it that way, it was 3 days of testing, but we could pack that into one day and still be home a little bit. That was the idea.
Yeah. And you had to build bikes.
Yeah.
And just see the kids, like, and all that. Oh, by the way, we just flew from California yesterday. We just raced last night. We were back here. But yeah, we definitely put
a good try for sure. Yeah. We did everything we could, and it didn't really work.
Yeah.
And Pirelli did too. They were awesome to deal with.
There wasn't nobody. I mean, everybody did. I mean, somewhat Yamaha even, like,
not as much.
Yeah.
They were a little bit not as cool. But if they would have been, if we had a better relationship with them, I think it could have been.
Well, we were basically saying their bikes was fat, you know, cutting in there, and we were putting like,
yeah, because they didn't want us to do that either. Like, that was, we're basically taking a bike that they think is ready and tearing it all apart and telling them it's not good enough. So I get where they're at too.
Yeah.
It's racing's tough. Like, it's hard to step back when you're in that mode, because just like now you see these riders when you're doing these rewind shows and you're talking about riders, setups, teams and drama, like, they're only focused on them.
Yeah.
And when you sit back now on this side and you went through all that, it's totally different.
Yeah.
Like, you're like, I went through that stuff. I can help you, but they're still going to go through it because they think it's only them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
you need to see it not work to know.
Yeah. You have to go through all of it, and you have to make the bad choices and the good choices to get where you are. And, I think one of the guys that I deal with a little bit at work, he always says there's no bad decision or bad choice or wrong decision. Everything makes you who you are today.
Yeah.
So everything you did, everything I did, you did, it's all who we are. So help mold us into the person we are.
Yeah. That's why when you said like we failed, I'm like, no, we didn't fail. Like, it just created, it opened up doors. It just wakes you up like to see stuff. And yeah, like being where I'm at now, I'm like, if I could only think this way when I raced, you know, it would have been a lot different. But, you know, JGR, like, it actually helped me, going through the Suzuki, because even when I got on that, like, it, I mean, I won in the beginning, but then we struggled like on there. It came out that air fork, and then like we struggled, but it reminded me of like, it created patience, and like I was able to deal with the process, because that's what we did here. Like, I mean, even from the beginning at JGR, like it's like the bike did get better. It was just so far from like where it needed to be to compete. And the Kawasaki was good that year. And then we're looking at Dungey switch over to KTM. They just created a whole new motorcycle. And so we had to improve a lot just to get to a point to where, like, I'm like, I think we can compete for a title, because it wasn't about, I mean, it was winning races, but it was about being consistent, like to be there. So we did improve from January to like when I like stopped. But when I got on Suzuki's, like it allowed me to like enjoy testing and enjoy like the little processes to get to where I got to in 14. Like I just got better and better throughout 13 and then got to 14 where we were like, dude, no, I can hear it now. And in 15, if it wasn't for that suspension, like, I know I would have won that championship. It was, I was riding best I would have in years. But it was all because of like, you know, JGR and like really just being able to like enjoy that process. And, I will say that like it did create me and enjoying the testing and trying to get better on that side instead of worrying about just the results. So there's always positives, on anything. And like you said, with other riders, like, yeah, the ones that really appreciate like some of the recap stuff are the ones that got kids a little bit older, you know, like those are the ones that like kind of see like where, you know, like hindsight in life, you know, what's important, how to get there. And it's cool. But in 2001, 2002, there was no patience on me. Like when I got in that 125 class, it was win today, even though Rick Ash thought like I wasn't ready because I used to crash all the time and whoops. And
well, you'd come out and come to a test and you couldn't even do the whole test and you'd go home and then we wouldn't even know when he's coming back.
I remember I got trigger finger. That's when trigger finger first came, dude. I was cramping in my arms and you start like, what side? Like on there, I was cramping from dying. And it's funny. I would probably consider myself like the best ever in whoops, top three for sure.
I still say the only one close to you is Christian Craig.
Yes. I mean, he's good. I get him that. But me? No. He wouldn't have done it on a
two-stroke.
Nah,
it's a lot easier how he just comes in, good torque, stays on top.
Yeah. No, you're right. You know, I would say
he's, you would do that, but you hit the turn wide open and got up on top. That was different. And then James, the first time he hit whoops at Anaheim, he crashed and he just turned around, which you can't do anymore. And he just hit him again. He just hit him faster and then he made it.
Well,
you said you had to do it right away or you get all scared of
it. It would freak me out. Like if it was like Pops always told me, like you get knocked down on a horse, like get up and do it.
That's what he'd do. So he'd turn around and not even ride the rest of the track and just hit him again.
Yeah.
And I remember walking the track with you and you were scared of the triples. I'm like,
still scared of them.
Still scared.
I'm like, that's the easiest part of the whole track. No. What are you worried about that for?
Because the
triples were harder then. Like out of the corner, I remember you doing a couple that no one else was doing.
And our bikes wasn't the fastest. Like in that 2002.
That was your corner speed though. Like the bike. That's what created good. But your corner speed was the momentum you carried is what made it look better than it was too.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of things that like it was. It was nice when I transitioned in from amateur to pro, because a lot of, we talked about it before, but I only rode, I mean, half a year on 125s because I got hurt right after Loretta's when I was going to move up. I dislocated my shoulder. So I was out, and then I raced B class, and I think I went A class at Loretta's, right? Like, well, I only rode 1 year, and then I went to pro, but it wasn't like I had growing pains, and I was just learning how to like race supercross because I mean I never did that, and then being in the stadiums and then riding West Coast no dirt, I never really raced, and coming in pink gear, it was a lot of stuff. But like my riding, I didn't have to evolve on that part. Like I was fast enough, and then I was doing the scrub, I was doing things to where, you know, other guys were like imitating me. Like I just had to learn how to race and then figure that part out, compared to like if I would have came in and, all right, I need to find speed and need to figure out how to jump. That helped me out a lot. But I think it was just more, I never lost. I think never really losing during amateur helped me like continue to win, because I never saw myself ever losing. Like I never looked at those other guys as if,
they
like,
could beat you.
Well, I mean, I was afraid of Pingree and, you know, Tedesco, Mike Brown, like me, because those are the guys I just watched on TV, and they were Shea Bentley just won the title before over David. So of course, like I was thinking that, damn, that's who they are. That's David Pingree, you know, that's Mike Brown. But I never thought like when I was on the track that they were better than me. And
that's because they weren't.
Yeah. No, and I found that out real quick. Anaheim.
Yeah, but you like, I ran in the back of
everybody.
The whoops. Remember, he was going so fast in the whoops. You ran in the back of whoever was leading. Was it Preston?
No, Gosler.
Gosler. Yeah. I remember it was a Honda. and you ran the back of him and it messed you up.
Or you messed me up. Yeah. I mean, he messed up. And yeah. Back then, the whoops were so small, big, like you couldn't stop.
There was a rut. I think you guys were in a rut and you couldn't get out of it.
True theory, stuck in the rut.
There you go.
Yeah. Now he messed up and he was sketchy too. He was sketchy. But yeah, that Anaheim race really showed me that I'm like, oh, I'm gonna f these guys up. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. But truthfully, I ended up doing that. Yeah.
So back then, J-Bone, how was he as a tester?
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, how was that?
He didn't, at that point, you didn't really know anything. You just wrote it. Yeah. And then usually it was more dealing with him coming out, get used to the dirt, the team. You know, learning to talk like he does now. Like, you didn't really talk.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't talk until like 3 years ago. I wasn't really talking.
Like, he was always like, I mean, if we had texting back then, that would have helped.
Yeah.
Text from the bike.
I did have like secret Nokias back in the day.
Secret Nokia.
No, but it wasn't texting Nokia. It was texting my old girl. Like,
but yeah, he got better at testing for sure. But it's like anything, you have to enjoy it. Like you said, you started to enjoy it later. I think that's the hardest part is to, you know, when you're in race mode, you just want to fix that and then get back to your program so you can race. So no one starts liking testing. Yeah. So you were normal, what you were thinking.
Yeah.
I remember your dad, you hurt your shoulder or something at the track. And then
he
grabbed your other arm and bent it way up. And you're like, ow, ow, ow. And he's like, all right, how's the other arm? And you're like, all right, I'm good. And then you never complained about
the
injury again because he's like, this side hurt. I'll just make this side hurt worse, and then you'll forget about that one.
And that's the truth. Like, I remember MX Compound. That was the first test I think I did.
Yeah, you with Pro Circuit. I remember that because that's the one you came out and you'd ride up and you didn't even talk.
Yeah, it was the first time I even like tested with these guys.
But I get it now. Like at the time, I'm like, how come this kid won't talk to me?
Was it this?
But he was young. You were 15 years old. Yeah. Like, that's crazy. You think, wait till your kids are 15. Like, mine are 15 and 17, and it's crazy to
put them in that situation.
Put them in what you had to go into. Like, nowadays, the rush, you can wait. Like, I think 20, I mean, even 25 isn't too old now. But at that time, you felt like you had to be in there at 16 years old, because that's when you can turn pro.
Yeah.
And it is very young. Like, you did really good considering all that. Like, when you look at these old pictures, that's probably not how you remember it. How you look like a little kid with braces.
Yeah. I mean, and I didn't want to wear braces. Fox made me wear braces because you got to straighten your teeth up. So that's why I had them on. But it was, I mean, pink gear. It was always, I was put in a position where cool. It was like, you know, being black, you know, number one. And then like, I didn't have any experience of like anything, like, you know, like.
Oh, you're a kid.
Yeah. I mean, I was a kid. And then I didn't have a lot of experience on a big bike. But
see, like, I didn't realize that because I just came in Yeah. Well, I did watch you at like the U.S. Open and stuff on an 80.
Yeah, yeah, because you guys were racing.
Yeah,
yeah, so you were racing
there, and I remember watching you ride on these tough blocks. I'm like, that guy's crazy. He didn't even let off. He just pinned it right across the top.
Pinned out, gas it.
Yeah. That's what he did. Yeah, it was crazy. I should have known then.
Yeah, but I mean, again, I truthfully can't. I couldn't ask for a better situation than I had like going up, and I talked about this on the podcast. Like, I think my whole career, like, I wouldn't have been able to be who I am if I would have went to Honda compared to like Kawasaki, just as a personality, because, you know, like you did, like, you helped a lot. And it's just that, I mean, how he is right now, like, it was just cool. Like, it made it okay. Even the days that like I was confused and struggle, like it wasn't,
I'd call you every Monday and tell you that we're not, none of us are against you. We're all for you. Cause he would always get it. Think that we're like, all these riders get like that. Like, they think the team isn't giving them their best. Like, I'm like, I would tell you, why do you think that?
Well, I think part of it is, yeah, I don't
know. We're saving it for Michael Byrne. That's what I always tell you. You think we're going to save all the good stuff and give it to Burner?
Everybody's, I mean, come so on. Insecure. Like, yeah, you're insecure by being replaced. And, you know, I think that's a part of a safety mechanism and, mm-hmm. and riders. Like, you kind of like, it's gnarly as we are as athletes. Like, we're very insecure. Like, it's always like you can never fully be like, nah, it was just on me. Like, it's the team. Like, you got to have some kind of belief that you can figure it out. It must be the team ain't helping you out. Like, they're against me. And you use that stuff as motivation and, you know, to try to almost like as a, you turn a negative into a positive, like reverse right. psychology. Like, well, they ain't going to give it. I'm going to do it anyway. Like, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. So that's probably the reason why, most riders and being replaced, like your teammate.
Yeah, it probably is.
And normally the teammate's like always happy and everybody likes the teammate because he's just like, oh, I'll test this, I'll test that. And you're at like, nah, man, I can't. I'm focused on winning.
Yeah, the second guy always is that mm-hmm. way because he wants to get better and earn that spot. The number one guy is when it's hard.
It's never going
to
change.
No, it's like that forever. That's what these guys don't get. We've seen this over and over.
Whether we're here, I just heard a story over the weekend. Factory team, two GP riders. One guy's bad because he thinks the other guy's bike's
It's always
better.
Like that. So it's never. It's that's no not, different. There's there no way there. They would, let's get the bad stuff on that guy's bike. Yeah. That doesn't happen.
No, I think it. I think what it is somewhat perception, because even I dealt with it, I mean, with Chisholm at L&M, I mean, even Burner, Carpenter back in the day, they were somewhat, they're the test guy. I mean, you know, the second guys, but like you always tested with them on there. You always do all the new stuff. If Dean created or Rick created a new engine, he put it on their bike because he don't want it to mess up, blow up on me. So as a rider, like, as you know, number one, you're looking at, why are they always testing with him on there? He's always getting this good stuff, even though I knew why he was doing it. Yeah. And then again, like, I think knowing that the second guy always gets in a closer relationship with the engine guys because he's part of
working,
like,
together more.
They're working together. Right. Yeah. And so you just look at it and perception is like, well, I mean, he's giving them good stuff. He ain't giving it to me. And when in fact, they're just doing something to help you, like, on there to get whatever. So I think it's just the way you look at it. And, you know, again, the second guy was always, they loved him. He's helping them. You know, he can do bad. They still love him. They go test with him on Monday.
They're not paying him as much. That's
they're
why.
Not paying him. But, you know, again, I think if you're looking at that, then I think that's a, then you probably wouldn't be mad at the test guy because you'd be, well, my check's better. You know, I never looked at it that way. I was just looking at, well, I mean, they're giving him something that they could give me and it helped me do my job because I'm here about winning. Like, I don't give a shit about money. And, you know, I just want to go win. So I think it's just more, just that, like, it's just he's a part of it. He becomes a part of the crew, like the team, and all that. And so,
but it's hard to think that when you're a kid though, right?
Like, I never thought about that way until I just talked about it right now. Yeah, that's right. I'm like, oh shit. Like, no, I won't hate Regal anymore. You know,
the whole crew is there for you.
Yeah. But you don't, no one thinks of it like that. Like, that is why all that is set up. And Kawasaki honestly was a really, I was talking to Roger about that. Like, out of all the places you went, like, they treated you really good, but you don't know it.
Yeah.
Like, you have no idea. Like, you got so much product from them. Like, I remember you were out of budget and I built a mule for you. Do you remember that bright green one?
I still have it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I built that whole thing just for you because you wanted one for you because your dad took the other ones to drive around the farm.
That green mule, you.
The bright one? Yeah, the fluorescent one. I remember that. Yeah. So I did that myself through my own budget. Not, I didn't pay for it, but I went and got it through all my people at Kawasaki to make that happen because he was out of budget already.
Yeah. Well, I think like, I actually know Kawasaki did like a lot more than over. They did a lot for me, you know, like, I mean, we used to get a product allowance every year, mules, and that's why we got all these ones out. But I think that was a part of like when we were doing our contract, it was actually a negotiation in there. But not many people do that, though. Not anymore. I don't think they do anymore. But
I
guess
it's a little like Joe Gibbs, like just stoking out the rider.
Well, that's why I was nervous to have him come to the team because David was at our team too, and I said, I know what he got at Kawasaki, and we can't do any of that.
Yeah.
So how's he going to be happy here? He wasn't even happy there. But you know, I felt like I knew you good enough, and we could work through it. And you know, we worked through some stuff, but we couldn't work through all of it, obviously, but we're all good.
Yeah. I'm thinking about it now. Like, I mean, truthfully, the reason I went to Kawasaki, one of the main reasons was because of him, and the same thing with JGR. Like, I mean, it was you. Like,
but do you remember you telling me you wanted me to act like, you remember the, what was his name? The crazy guy that worked on Pro Circuit.
the guy that was smoking a cigarette, pouring gas.
Yeah, you're like,
Mike Brown's
you gotta
mechanic.
Act like him. I said,
he was, I love that guy still love
he
him.
He tried to tell me, he goes, I want you to act
he
like that guy.
He was too cool.
I said, I have
Brett,
to act like
Brett Meyer.
Brett Meyer.
Dude, so awesome. I liked him too, but I'm like, I can't act like somebody I'm not. I said, if you see me clapping, it's because I mean it. I'm not clapping for the parade lap like all these idiots, like they do. They come by the parade lap and they're clapping like they did something. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not clapping for that. You need to get out front for me to clap. If you see something good I was calm. And when you see me get excited, I'm really excited. No, I'm not fake.
I'm glad you were the way you were. Looking on the TV on there, I just saw him on there. It's insecurity. Like, we just want to be like loved. I mean, that's it. And to be honest with you, the mechanic, realize it or not, like, they're probably the most important person on the team. Like, I mean, all you got your trainers and all that. Everybody does their job. Everybody has their part. But the mechanic's the last person you talk to. Like, you're the last thought I have going out to the track.
And practice bike mechanic.
The practice guy mechanic for sure. Like, he's got to motivate you during the week. But, you know, what Bone says before I go out, like, that's my thought. If he says, dude, you suck. Like, then that's what I'm on the gate. So I think having like Brett around, like seeing him, the animation, it wasn't like I want to act. It was just the fact that like hype me up.
Yeah.
But you knew I didn't need any more of that. Like, I was already.
Yeah, we need you to calm down. I remember telling you, you're like, my bike won't go down the hill like that. I'm like,
must have been.
You're going down it wide open. You don't have to go down the hill wide open. No one else is.
Not made to go down the hill.
You're already going down the hill 2 seconds faster. But you back it down to 1 second. We're still killing it.
Yeah.
He wants to go wide open down the hill.
Yeah. And that's what he was really good at too. He rode, you know, so a lot of people, and I used to go riding with him, and we used to have fun like during the week. Like, I mean, we sat back when they had the track.
Did it more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you couldn't. Like, I mean, we used to do the mini bikes. That was awesome on there. Yeah.
Took Padge out, blew his knee out.
He did blow his knee out. That was my Saddleback. Saddleback. That's what I was about to say. Like, we used to go ride there. And yeah, it was my fault. I kind of took him out a little bit, you know, but he used to get so mad on there. But I mean, all that stuff. I mean, you start thinking about it now, but it was. I mean, you were very, very important on like me becoming who I am. And I think, again, the mechanic part of things, it was like the rider and the mechanic, I think, has to be like, you know, two peas in a pod. Like, I mean, if I didn't get along with my mechanic, or I wouldn't say not get along with him, because I always had good ones, but if one didn't talk enough, it was just a motivation thing. I wanted to feel like that guy would go to war with me. Like, and then we would just fight anybody. And I think he was like Bogle over here.
I did fight that one time. Do you remember that? The Chad Spamjack. Do you remember that?
I do remember.
We had to go to the LCQ at San Diego. This guy, I didn't know he's like a kickboxer. He's like legitimate. So anyway, you were all mad because he took you out. And then we were riding through the tunnel. And you like wrecked into him. We both wrecked. I was on the back. And then we rode like up to the thing and you were throwing your helmet and I like went to the guy's pits.
Oh yeah.
And
he wasn't. Remember that.
And I like started pushing his stuff around and looking for him. And I like ripped his banner down. He had
I remember. Yeah.
And then
I love
this guy,
you remember this one?
I remember now. Like I still don't remember all the details from, but I do remember like him, like because of what I did, almost creating him get his ass whooped on there. But that was my guy. That's all I wanted. I wanted to get knocked out. Yeah. I wanted to get knocked out.
I was gonna too.
Yeah, and like it wasn't. Some people pretend he wasn't. Like he knew like he was who he was, but he was prepared to get knocked out, and that's all I cared about. That's it. So.
Yeah, that's funny. I remember one of the guys that worked at Kawasaki, this guy Lanny J, was helping that guy, and he's like, the one that came and talked to me, called him and said, hey, this guy is a kickboxer. You don't want to fight this guy. He understands that you're mad. Like, he talked me down.
That's what was cool. Like, I think the guy was actually cool.
He worked at Kawasaki later, and I ended up become good friends with him after that. I didn't even know he worked there, but we became friends after that. It was funny.
Let's go to a quick commercial break real quick, and we'll come back up and catch up on everything else. This has been good. So we'll be right back.
You got it.
All right, we're back, and we were talking about, you about to get beat up and, or at least fighting for your rider, which that's all I cared about. It was the most important thing. What year was that actually? Now I'm bringing back. I'm showing the gray age in this hair. Like,
there's too many of them.
I still don't. I'm still trying to think when I was at an LCQ.
That was the only time ever, and it was because of that guy.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it either had to be 2006, it wasn't 2006. 2005, I didn't race. 2004, I didn't race West Coast.
It was on a 125, so maybe it was the first year then.
No,
it couldn't have been.
It wasn't even San Diego, I could think, because I could tell you every heat race. I won the heat race in 2002. That was my first ever heat race win ever. In 2003, I dominated. I passed the two Suzuki guys in the whoops. 2004, I rode East Coast. 2005, I was hurt. 2006, I came. That's when McGrath got me. 2007, I beat Reed in the heat race. It was one time we were like paired together in the heat race. 2008, you left to go to JGR. So.
Yep. So where was it, Dave?
I don't know. I'm going to have to look this up. Get my facts straight. It wasn't San Diego, I guess, but I'll figure it out.
Let me think about this because I could probably tell him where it was.
You did watch a lot. That's what I think he did really well was he studied a lot of tape, and it made you better.
Yeah.
Like every time I came to your house, you had TVs going in there. A couple of them.
Or in the back of the bus.
I always watch old races. Yeah, I still watch the race. I'll probably watch the race this weekend like four times already on there. I've always do. I watch practice. That's why when you were talking about the, you can fast forward it on the Supercross Live, I was like, maybe I didn't have that on mine. But on the heat race, I'm like curious now. I can tell you if it was a heat race, the only year I could think of would be 2000.
It would have been out of a tunnel. So I don't know if it's like a Pontiac. I just remember riding out of a tunnel because we ran into him down below.
Yeah.
In the underneath.
Sure was an outdoor race?
Wasn't outdoors. A stadium for sure.
All right. Yeah. Because, I mean, I won pretty much every heat race. And I'm going through in 2006. I won every heat race in 2006. 2007, I won basically every heat race too. And then 2005... I only went to one LCQ, and that was at Houston when I crashed and remember I broke my rib in Dragon's Back. And it was like when we came back from injury. I won the first heat race that year at Anaheim 1, 2005, that mud race. I got hurt at Phoenix, and then I came back and won the heat race at Orlando, won the heat race at Pontiac, won the heat race Seattle. In Vegas, I crashed. I went down. I ran into the on that start. I went down and hurt my thumb. So only lost that one heat race in 2005. So it wasn't that.
Let's go back to the ball.
Maybe I'm wrong.
We'll have to go back to the, or the guy. No, I do remember.
I do remember him getting into it with somebody, but I almost feel like it was. It probably was a practice.
It could have been.
It probably was a practice, and it was either had to be a practice or an outdoor national. But I do remember him about to fight somebody. I'm just going through all the years.
I don't have a memory like his. That's pretty good.
I can't believe he remembers all that stuff either.
And then I know in 2003. I won all the heat races there. Everything. Cause that was the year I raced Preston. I only lost that one race. The first round, I got a bad start and Preston was up front and I couldn't catch him. And that's when we were doing that on off that I was jumping over the tabletops right after the mechanics area, like instead of going on off, and it slowed me down through that whole section. It was like I was going over this. I had like a step up and it was three tabletops. It was on, off, and another one. And then what you would end up doing if you went over, you went inside on the next section and then you had to go roll and then table over single. But if you went on, off, it was like, you know, you just kept your speed up and then did it again before the triple. And I was losing like a second there and I would make up the time, but I could never really catch them. So that was the only race I lost that year until we got to Vegas. And in 2004, I only lost Atlanta, crashed in the first corner, end up fourth in the heat race on the 125. That was the only one I lost there, except for when I didn't race and when I got knocked out in Indy when Hansen won.
Oh, yeah.
And then in 2002, again, it was the first one. I lost the first heat race ever. I crashed a million times in the first pro race, but I won the LCQ. And then I think I lost another heat race that year.
The guy can remember every race he's raced in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I talked to him on Friday and said, hey, make sure you go get your passport renewed. Guarantee he forgot about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I did forget about that. Yeah. I mean, I guess people remember what they want to remember.
Priorities, yeah.
Yeah, on there. But, yeah, it'd be cool. Like, the one part I was actually excited for him coming down was, like, you know, just talking about these stories. Because I actually like remembering those things that you like to we have so many the races are one thing, I'll remember all that, but it was the little things in between that you just, those are the things that I appreciate now, you know. It's like, that's pretty cool.
Do you remember after Hansen won, we went to that club after, yep, and you were going to get in a fight with somebody, was it?
I got hit by a bottle.
Yeah, you were going to get in a fight in this bar, and we had a concussion that night. We're like, we shouldn't be fighting anybody. We shouldn't even be in here.
I remember what I was, because we were about to fight. I ended up losing this fish that I was, man.
I think we're going to fight Hanny at the end,
too. We were going to fight Hanny. It was a fight. Yeah, because he was
one of Hanny's buddies or something.
Yeah, of course. In there, Jägermeister. That's when Jägermeister's bat big and stuff was disgusting.
Hanny wins a race, and we were going to beat him.
Yeah, we're gonna beat him up because he was like, I'm better, I was gonna win. I don't even know why. He probably didn't even say it, and we were gonna fight.
Yeah, you just felt that way. I don't think he said anything.
I think I told him.
You did tell him. I went to him. That's what it was.
Maybe that's where it came from. Like on there,
tunnel. You got me all worked up because you're telling me that he was talking crap that he would have won.
And we were like gonna fight, and I was talking to this chick. We're all adults. I was talking to this girl, and because I heard that. Of course, I went and told him, and the next thing you know, I remember I don't know if we were scuffling or whatnot, but I think we got kicked out or something. We ended up having to leave, and I just remember seeing her in the taxi cab going, bye. I was like, God damn, now I'm really beat Hansen up now. I'm beating him up now. But yeah, I remember that. Yeah, we didn't race that night. We went out. Michael Jordan was there that night.
And you probably could have raced, but I think that was the right call because you got knocked out twice.
Yeah, I think it
one time it wasn't your fault. Somebody was cutting in the mechanics area and you clipped the back wheel.
That's what it was. I crashed twice.
Your fault.
Yeah, I crashed twice and I think I might have hit my head or something, but then I got hit. That was the one, the mechanics. Maybe that's where the guy was.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably what it was because it had to be like a practice or something while we were fighting. And that's probably what we were about to fight somebody in. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. And then I got knocked out there in Indy and when I was on the Gibbs. Yeah. That's when I missed Toronto.
Yeah.
And
that's right.
That's the one that I don't know how much you know about that one, but remember I did the concussion test and I passed it. I don't remember taking it. I was like,
I called Feld down. So I called all the Feld guys because you did hit your head. And I'm like, hey, if he wants to race, we got to figure this out because I know they're not going to let him race. And then you pass. And I'm like, how the heck did he pass this concussion test? You don't even know his name.
Yeah.
But and that test is, it's tricky. It's, I think it's different parts of your brain. So obviously you're all right on the remembering things, but except for your name.
Well, it wasn't that. I think I was so like knocked out that like, you know, like if you just talk, I was just repeating what he was saying. And so I didn't have no other thoughts besides like what he was just saying. And I remember my dad telling me afterwards, and this is kind of where it funneled into like when I was like, I got to think about myself because like I was under the impression that you guys wanted me to race. And my dad was like, he's not racing. Like he's not there on there. And I think it wasn't you wanted me to race because obviously you knew. I think you were saying that, well, he passed the test. So if he wants to, he can. Yeah. It's just up to him. And my dad took it as like, you guys wanted me to do it.
Happy that you chose that. Yeah. I was expecting you and your dad wanting to race.
Yeah.
And then you not being able to because Feld or, you know, whoever's doing the concussion test wouldn't let you. And I'm like, so I had them there and I'm like, oh, no, we're good. Everyone agreed he has a concussion, so we don't need help.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's funny how that transpire, like just, you know, I guess the perception on that, because that was a part of the reason, like it led into like when Houston happened, because probably my dad, I mean, he wouldn't have let me race. Because I was bad. Like, that's probably one of the ones that, like, I'm like, that was a bad knockout, like, on there. And I remember waking up in my motorhome. Like, that's when the first thing that came back to me was, like, in my motorhome. And that was after I did all the tests. I remember watching the video on, I think Felt sent me a video, like, carting off on the mule, doing the test and all that.
A bike hit you?
Caught up in the first corner. Yeah. And then, swing arm hit me in the head.
That's what it was, yeah.
Knocked me out. And then, we get there and I just woke up in my motorhome like, all right, where am I at? And then, my dad, he knew, like, he was like, dude, like, he's been crashing all year. Like, I'm not going to let him go out and race concussed. Like, he can't even, like, stay up, like, when he's, like, focused. So it was tough. And then I missed Toronto. That was the next race. And then Houston was after that. So it was a lot of things. Like I crashed again and I came back because I actually broke my hand. So I came back and I wasn't feeling like that good. And I felt like I came back to be there like for the team and all that. And then that thing, it happened again. So everything, I'm like, dude, I cannot like continue doing this. Like it's just so much. And then like, I'm like, you got to look out for yourself because like you're going to get hurt on there. And then so that was all kind of leading up to that, like all those little things. But again,
you remember when I pushed you to the line at Southwick?
Yeah.
You couldn't even walk.
Yeah.
And I pushed the bike with
2006
all the way up. And he was leading the race and his bike blew up.
Yeah. Last lap.
I just watched smoke and you go like this and I'm like, oh no.
Yeah.
And the part like as a mechanic and when you're like the person, like we were friends, like it's the worst thing ever to see a bike smoking, blowing up and him getting ready to wreck. Like it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's like what you fear all the time.
Yeah. It's like, I mean, again, I think that's the part like that hurt the worst, the whole JDR. It was just relationships that I got with those. I mean, and it wasn't even like I knew these guys from the beginning, you know, even with Dean and obviously Jeremy. And then David was my agent. So like, you know, we got on a personal level, but all those guys. So leaving, it was emotional. But yeah, there was never one time that it was like I thought it was you. Like I knew you cared. Like, and what the race he's talking about was after I got knocked out, leading the race in
That was on the Kawasaki.
At Hangtown. High Point.
Yeah.
And then too. I messed up like my knee, concussed, came back next weekend to race Southwick, and then I got second in the first moto, battling Ricky. Or no, I won the first moto. Actually, I won the first moto. I think I was battling and he fell. And I won the first moto and then he was winning the second moto and I was just pumped because I just lost 50 points the week before. And I was going to come out of that race tie and I was hurt. So I was like, cool. And then that thing blew up in the same place I ended up crashing in 2013 on the Suzuki. It blew up. And I remember like getting folded up and like you know, laying there, and I saw that bike smoking. I was like, thank God. Thank God, because I was like, did I just endo?
Yeah, I thought
I just did something, like, again, and I saw it smoking, and then we missed Butch Creek. But, yeah, and that thing blew a hole in the side.
Yeah, it was the worst one ever.
It was big. But one of the toughest times with me and him, emotionally for me, was when you went to JGR.
Yeah.
I
felt bad. Yeah. I remember telling you in the motorhome
at
Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe you. I'm like, there's no way he's going.
And, like, the hard part, like it never was you or Kawasaki. Like, it really was the opportunity for me.
But you didn't know what you were getting into. Really, you didn't know if it was going to work.
No, you never know. But honestly,
is how I felt.
Looking at it, the only reason that I did it is I didn't like it, who I was working with at the time, and that's who I was with
Mike
all
Fisher.
The time.
Yeah.
Well, he was part of it.
Yeah,
but
I know the other guys.
The two mics.
Yeah, yeah.
The two mics were like buddies, and they were like against me.
They were.
And it was not fun. And I'm like, that's who I'm in the rental car with. I don't even talk to him because, like I said, I don't fake it. So if you don't like me and I don't like you, I'm not talking to you.
And you just became a dad. I remember you just had your kid like right around then. Or I guess you had your kid in 2004 because you missed Binghamton. Randy Lawrence.
Like, I built the bike. I did everything.
Yeah.
Sent it there. And I remember him asking me for a bonus. So I'm like, what?
Who
I did everything. All you did was go to the race.
RL.
You did help. Really? Yeah. Randy did that one. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the test guy then. He did a good job at that. But
yeah. Now he's cool. I understood why you were doing it. I wasn't even like upset why
you
were doing it.
Yeah.
But I just like, damn, like, dude, we just won the Supercross title. Like, I think we can win this outdoor title. And like, yeah, I knew about the two mics and like it got to him because he was always truthful with me. Like, I mean, even the stuff like that, like he wouldn't say, like he would say it in a way I knew, like whether it was like trying to get something with the bike. So he came in and I remember like, it was almost like you were tearing up. Like,
yeah,
I'm like, dude,
I
we
was.
Should be stoked. Like, we just won this title. Like, what's going on? Like, and then he's like, hey, I just want to let you know. And I was like, this didn't happen tonight. Like, you've known this for a while.
Since Easter.
Yeah. And I was like, probably like a little bit bummed on that. I'm like, man, we're so close. Like, you could have told me.
I didn't tell Padge either. I didn't
know. No, for sure. It was tough.
My own brother didn't know.
Yeah.
Nobody knew.
But what he's saying right there is how I felt when I left Gibbs.
Yeah.
It was the same thing. Like, it's not you guys. Like, it's not that. It's just like, I can't do it. For him, it was a better opportunity. It was the right one. There. And I think like at Kawasaki at that time, like there was just so much, like just as much as the riders were battling, like it was the mechanics and that's the one thing that did suck about like certain teams in the industry. Like you had like groups even on like, okay, you expect me and Chad Reed, like our guys, you're on that side of this side, but you don't really expect the team to be that way.
Yeah.
And it was, and it became like, I remember like even trying to get stuff, like him having to build his bike in between the races and Big B, he wouldn't help.
Yeah, he wouldn't help me.
Yeah. Like on there. And
was that when Bruce left?
Yeah. It was Fisher. Yeah.
And then
when Bruce was there, it was really good.
And then he kind of stepped away and had a role at Monster. I think it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he might have went upstairs, didn't he?
Well, he did do that first. He was like overseeing all of racing. Then he went to Monster after that.
Mm.
And Mark Johnson, he was in there a little bit.
Yeah, Mark was in there. And yeah, I mean, I don't know how he was to work for his like on the team, but he
was okay. He was kind of like, he was pretty full of himself.
But yeah.
He was good at it.
He's kind of like, I would say with him, he would be like the coach that like a Phil Jackson coming back and like coaching, like he kind of built up like, all right, it's Mark Johnson. Then he went to IndyCar. Mm-hmm. And then, so when he came back, it was like, we should be grateful that he's back. And I mean, I stayed at his house, a month there. So I got to know him and I've known him for a while, even when I think he worked at Team Green, back in the day. But yeah, he was on a little arrogant a little bit because he just came from IndyCar, so it was like a step down to him. So like,
yeah, he really always talked bad on motocross, and I'm like, why are you here then? You don't like it, you're IndyCar, because IndyCar is always beyond. But I mean, he had a lot of knowledge, he was good, but he wasn't, I would say what Bruce was good at and the other guys were not, was making the team work together.
Bruce is like Eddie. Bruce was like Eddie, like a good, you know, like
mellow,
not
ego, all about the team. That's what he did well. And that's what I tried to learn from what Bruce did well. And I wish our team had more success when I was at JGR, because plenty of success at Kawasaki. Like, and that was the other thing when I was quitting. It wasn't you that I was quitting on. I was like, we're going 1-2 with Ferry.
Yeah.
And we're miserable.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's hating each other. Williamson wants, like, I think he's jealous of, he thinks I make a ton of bonus money and I would buy something and he would buy something. It's this dumb little game that I'm like, I don't even watch you. I don't have anything to do with you. I got him the job even.
Yeah.
I remember, I just felt like, why is it like that?
Yeah. I remember even having like give those guys bonus money because like,
it was, did it. It was cool. Like, not many people do that. And you gave the whole team.
The whole team. Yeah.
Not just
knowing that. And it was like, well, it was unfair. And I just kind of looked at it as like, well, I mean, we all should be in this thing together, even knowing that like all this stuff was happening. But yeah, it was. And it was weird because I kind of blamed Mike for a little bit, like for a while of like him leaving. And then like right after that, Mike ended up being my mechanic for outdoors. Like, it's funny how
that was the plan for him. That's what it was.
And then, but then I, like, it was kind of like a little bit like Larry Brooks. Like, if you worked against him, like, it like sucked. Then,
but if you were on him,
he was like super cool. And I mean, I enjoy it. Like, I did feel like same thing with you. Like, I felt like he was with me when I went to the gate. But then like when I left there, I was trying to get him to come over to L&M. And we just couldn't work out the contract details. And then it was like, he worked for Villopoto and it was like the Ferry thing again. Like, you don't even know me anymore and all that. And now it's just kind of how the industry is. But all those same people I speak to now, it's like completely different. Like, you can just talk about it. And I think everybody's in a place, but you know, that's the one thing that is tough about this industry is like, you know, people don't have an issue with like climbing on each other and like, you know, getting to the top and don't really care how they do it. And I think for me, like where I'm at, like, I mean, not to say I never did anything maliciously to anybody. Like, I wouldn't try to like hurt somebody to get up to the top. But I mean, I'm sure I probably was maybe not the best person, like maybe just quiet or, I don't know, rude or whatnot, because it made me feel good to be able to go on the track. But like, as far as trying to hurt somebody or take them out to like try to win a race, and just as a person, like I never was like that. So that part got to me. Like, it was the every team I left on, like, it was always like the way they treated me right afterwards. Like, that got to me. And like, I think that was a part of the Gibbs thing, like that bummed me out. And you know, my personality and me shutting down also, like, I'm probably with that, you know, and egging that on, like making these guys. But it was the fact that, like, you know, coach wouldn't call me back. I'm like, but like, just, I was dying for you guys. Like, I mean, I'm, you know, working as hard. And then, you know, it was just all because we all wanted the same thing. But it was just another thing in the industry that I'm like, whatever. And it just made me pull back to myself even more.
Right.
And then, so yeah, it was tough, but now I don't give a shit. Like, you don't like me, whatever. I don't, it's like, I get along with everybody now. Me and Reed, we good friends, talk to him all the time.
I had that guy on my team.
Now,
like the guy that we hated is now on my team.
Yeah.
But even Ellie and I talked about that. Like, I mean, I had your brother on the team.
Yeah.
Dealt with your dad. Like, I don't hold grudges anyway.
Yeah, I remember. I'm sure when he was on there, you're like, here we go again.
Yeah.
Here we go. I remember
he was different. Your dad, he enjoys it more now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think realization, I think, like, for a while.
You're the first one doing it and the pressure of it all. And I don't know. You and your brother's personalities are different anyway.
We grew up
different.
You're more,
I would say more now, like maybe how your brother was.
Yeah.
More personable. But back then, like, you were serious. Like, it really was only, everything was about winning, like you said.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's the way we grew up. Like, Malcolm had a choice to race. I didn't. I mean, and
he was going to be a fisherman.
Yeah. I mean, he crashed. He didn't want to ride. And my dad would get so mad at him. But then he was just like, you know, whatever. Like, I got like junior. So, you know, my personality, I mean, kids grow up like their parents, like, you know, treat them like, you see a kid up here doing this and whatnot. So you just look at the parents, like, sure, they're pretty close to them. You got some exceptions. So my dad was just like the way he grew up. you know, and the way things were, like when I raised, it was just a continuation of that. And then so he molded me into the person I am, and I'm thankful for it, to be honest with you, because I wouldn't be who I am if it wasn't for him. So, but Malcolm was, he was like the opposite, like on there. And I think my dad wanted to, like my childhood and not having one and being at the races and stuff, I think he let Malcolm do that. And that's where the fishing and things came from. But the racing and all that, like as I continue to win, I think that sometimes the people around you, like it's, they get egos too. And not to say this in a negative way, but you know, I remember my dad, like when I lost, it was like he was out there racing. He lost on there. It wasn't like, damn, like my son lost. It was like we. And as much as that sucked sometimes, I was also grateful for that, because I always, when even when things went, you know, haywire and you started thinking, well, this and that, you always knew they were with you, because like just the way they're emotionally attached to you, like they go up and down on the roller coasters too. And sometimes it was, you know, going down, it sucked on there, but peaks, I knew it was because like he cared. And
peaks
and
valleys.
Yeah,
we had those, and we were on the roller coaster, yeah, that's for sure.
And there was times that he would yell at, you know, these guys. I remember one time at Indy, I think it was, you know, he went off on them guys, like the bikes.
It was San Diego.
I mean,
there was a few of them.
He went there a few times, but yeah. I think it was actually, yeah, that it was JGR.
And I always took it well, though, like even when I was at Kawasaki.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I always put myself in the situation, if it was my kid, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he knew it. Like, he knew that's how my dad, Coy, you know, like
that was San Diego that you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about San Diego.
The San Diego one. Yeah.
Well, Coy didn't know your dad.
Yeah. And
he's
used
to coaches like that. And so he took them, they went in the truck and talked, but they were hugging like right after, like it was fine.
Yeah.
They respected each other. Like,
yeah.
It wasn't like they weren't really going to fight, but.
No, I know. And I know what actually made it, what got Coy mad was that it was in front of everybody, you know? And like, I remember him saying like, he could say whatever to me, but like, I got sponsors and all that.
Yeah.
Like out here, don't do it in front of, like, you know, in public. And my dad, like, he was like, I don't care. Like my kid, like, he's struggling. I think I crashed or something. And he was feeling like that the bike was dangerous or whatever. And then, so he was upset because like, I was upset. And I was scared. And then he was like, well, I'm going to go say something. Because I was like, no, I actually remember it now. I was like, don't say anything to him. Like, you know, like, they can't fix it. They can't fix it. And he was like, nah, Junior, like, then you ain't going racing. Like, I know you're going to go out there and do it. And I was like, nah, just don't say anything to it. And he like walked out the bus and he said something to him. But everything was always because of me. So going back to what I was saying, I think, you know, my dad is sometimes, as hard as it was, like, I always knew. The only reason he was like that was because he cared. And, and I think that's, you know, when you look at, you know, the industry and stuff, like you don't get that from everybody. And of course, like if you ain't family, whatever, but there were some people and he was like that. And I had some other guys that was like, they cared, you know, not cared about winning or cared about their success, but they actually cared. And, you know, what he was saying about the bike blowing up, that's caring. And, you know, so it was tough when, you know, when we decided to separate back in, 2007, but I cared about him too. So I was okay with what he was doing, but it hurt. It was like my girl leaving. Like,
he wasn't really that good with it. He didn't talk. We didn't talk after that.
Well, I mean,
we would talk.
I was hurt.
A couple of years. Then you'd text me. We'd talk. Yeah. And I thought everything was good. And then we don't talk again. We talk again.
I would say, like, honestly, like.
But you're racing. Like, that's the thing.
That's what it was. Like, it wasn't like, I didn't care. Like, I was mad at you. It became like he became the enemy again.
Yeah.
I mean, to be honest with you. And that's. It was how I looked at everything. Like, on there, it was part of what we were talking about.
Yeah,
it
that way.
It's what I was saying about the mentality of like the test guy. Like, he becomes the enemy. Like, and on there, even though we're all working the same, so it wasn't because you left. I think it was because I went to L&M, and then we started racing each other. So now we're fighting over the same e-scrip basket, like on the Yamaha stuff. and I was jealous at some of the stuff they were being able to get. And
I remember we did something. They put radios in our helmets for TV. And I was talking about your bike.
Oh, yeah. Practice. That didn't help either. Yeah.
I was talking about his bike in practice about a sensor. And I didn't realize that they're using all that. And they put it in the show, me talking about the data acquisition that was on his bike and the sensors, which are legal. But then they said that telemetry is not legal on the show and acted like he was cheating, which they took it out of contents.
Oh, they took it out of
Brooks
contents.
Brooks was super mad.
I was
they were all thinking we're like going against him and like calling him out, which that wasn't even the right time. And I was just looking at his bike, making comments, like not even, but it's funny how this stuff all turns around differently.
Yeah, it was. And not just the same thing that bothered me with the whole suspension thing was the fact that people thought I would cheat. It was the same thing that got me with you guys. Like when that sensor thing, the fact that I would cheat, like was, I'm like, dude, that's the worst thing you can say to me. Cause I'm like, I don't need to like on there, beat all you guys. Cheating ain't the way to do it. I don't need to do that. So with the whole TV thing, it was like, why would another team, Yamaha, like we're all on the same team, right? Like why would they bring that up? And felt did what they do like on there. It was TV.
Yeah.
And then, so it was like, I was cheating on there. And then, you know, Brooks being Larry, you know, he riled me up too. And, but yeah, that was the one, that was probably the thing that actually got mad at you like for on there. And
that's
then,
fine.
Yeah.
That was more Feld TV.
Yeah, I know.
And they played it up.
Yeah. Again. And when they were filming, it wasn't even on there. Like that was the funny thing.
Yeah.
They
it
were
was during practice.
Yeah.
They
yeah.
circled something. It wasn't
they circled
even on there
TV,
anymore.
Like in the heat race, it wasn't even on there. So I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. I think you were even confused. You're like, are we cheating?
Yeah. Like, I'm like, I knew what they were talking about. Cause at that point we all knew like, you know, traction control, that's the biggest thing, was legal. And it became an issue when everybody went to EFIs, like, you can know, and all that. But
funny part is you don't even need any of those anymore. You can do it all off GPS.
So yeah.
You
like
can cheat now without even anyone knowing anyways.
It ain't even cheating now. Like you're an idiot if you do get caught cheating, I would assume. But yeah, it's, if you can adjust. I remember, I forgot who told me, one of the data engineer guys back in there, he's like, if you can adjust the way this thing, you know, response throttle and all that by computer, then it's traction control.
Yeah.
It's traction control. Like instead of like we doing with flywheels and all that, you do it by a computer. So technically they all cheat.
Yeah.
Because if you change
every
the jetting, it's like you're trying to get it. So the thing is running right. You're controlling the engine. That's traction control. So, you know, but they were trying to say it on the GPS and all that, which you still know where it's at. So
Get got a lot of attention from that.
That's actually what it was. Get.
I loved it.
Yeah.
The Get unit, which it was awesome. We bought one after that. Just so you know, we were the first second customer.
Yeah. We were the first one that we had this big old like
orange
thing right here. And it was like 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah. The
and then I'm like, well, they're highlighting that down there, but I mean, they look right here. Like you'd be like, whatever. But yeah, but it was the EFI. They were the first outside company to come in to help you like jet the bike or clean it up. And
yeah, it's pretty crazy what these bikes can do. Like you really can tune anything you want. Like I remember you telling us to do stuff to the bike. Like you were actually, he was good at the end. You talked about testing earlier. At the end, he got really good at what he wanted. I don't know that it works for everyone, but it worked for you really well.
Yeah. I think it was more, like I knew some things I would test, I knew was wrong, like on there, but I was trying to set it up that made me feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff I did was sometimes I would make the thing stiff just to have feedback on there, because I didn't like bikes that didn't have feedback. So I would make it stiff just so I can feel it in my hands, like on there. And so doing that, like people always like, oh, that's how you lose the front end. Well, that's one of the negatives to having it stiff. But I did it for a reason, because, you know, it was, I needed to know where the front wheel was because I ride on the front. And I remember I switched, I went to a triple clamp after talking to Sergio, and he was showing me, like, you know, analytics and like, look, the way the bike is, like, you shouldn't have 25 clamps on there. Like, and he showed me numbers and he was like, it doesn't make sense. And so I put it on for one race and went out there and lost the front end without even knowing it, and was woke up in the hospital. And I was like, I'm going back to 25s. And that's the reason I had it. I want things to slow down. I need feedback. And so I would set my bike up knowing that it might not make sense to these guys, but it makes a lot of sense to my hands, which registers to what I'm trying to do. So, but yeah, I think that's the one thing helping Chase and helping, you know, other guys, is that when I talk to the Honda guys or whoever, like, they're like, damn, like, okay, like, he understands this, like, a lot, like, you know, really well. And they question that just because of the way I set, you know, my bike up and stuff. But, you know, I learned a lot from, you know, these guys, and through testing. Like, I know what's right. It just might not be right for me on there. Sometimes you got to be wrong to be right. And that's how I felt with my motorcycle. So that's why I struggled so much on the Yamaha, is because, like, they took all the weight off the front end and I couldn't feel it. So that's why things were happening and I didn't even know they were happening. So
yeah, it was funny. We had one outdoor test, if you remember, as a new fork the year Roncada was battling with you at Hangtown. But we tested a fork earlier on, and you said you couldn't feel any bumps. You didn't like it. But that's like what everyone would want. Like, this fork was awesome. This fork and shock combo.
He had the double D's on there.
But it was awesome. And he's like, I don't want it. I need to feel the bumps. And we're like, okay. So then we went to the race. Roncada was battling with you and you were mad after. So then we came back. He's like, I want those forks that you can't feel the bumps now. So then we had to figure out how to homologate them, which is super tough. And because we did it late. So I remember Mount Morris, actually.
Yeah.
We had a sleeve made because the forks were a different size and we couldn't get triple clamps made in time. And I remember we were running these forks that
went to like 48, right?
Yeah, they were like way ahead of his time, and you could tell the difference. And so what Kawasaki did is they basically bought a works fork, and then they would sell it if you bought it as another person, because that's the rule. You have to be able to buy it to ride it. So they were going to lose money every time someone bought it. So we had them on there, and they were on the way. And if someone ordered them maybe a day early, we might have been not legal. We probably could have rushed it, but we were like worried. We didn't want anyone to know. And I was sitting there taking my forks off and the sleeve fell out, and Dan Bentley was right there at the fence talking to us. And I'm like, oh no, this guy's going to notice that we have a different fork in here. We're going to get in trouble.
He never said it,
which he's usually like catches everything. But I was so worried about it. Like, we talked about it the next Monday meeting, but no one ever ordered them.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got away with it, and it was legal, but you know, it's tough to hit those deadlines, 'cause I think you have to do it within 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And we did it all so late.
Yeah, because there was a difference between a works fork and a kit fork.
Yeah.
And what he's talking about is basically like when they went to, I think it was unleaded fuel, not a homologation rule, but just the rule for 125s to try to make it somewhat, you know, fair for everybody. Like you had to kind of run like what Mitch Payton sold, which was like a kit fork, like through Ford.
And it's still like show that.
But Roncada had?
No, Roncada didn't. He was on the four-stroke, and we didn't know at that time how good the four-stroke was. So
yeah,
you carried speed so well in the corner that I think it band-aided how good the four-stroke really was.
I mean, just look at Rhino. Like, dude, I don't think he finished a podium all year. And the guy almost won the title the year before. Like, he was – anybody who was on the 125 was, like, not even, like, top 10, barely. And – yeah, I was the only person on the two stroke. And then the funny thing was, it was even double the gap to the 250 and 450. Yeah. Like, and that was a tough time. That was a tough time because it was like the first time in my whole career that I was like,
I can't do it.
Can't do it. Like, and dude, I was dying trying. And that was, that was tough. That was tough.
That was the toughest year, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was because.
Because the bike, Kawasaki was supposed to come out with a bike before that.
We tested it up in Colorado.
Yeah.
Like before, but then
they didn't think it was ready for production. So they scrapped it and started over. And then James took it like they lied to him because in the contract, they said that was coming when you signed the last contract.
Yeah.
But, you know, in their defense, which you can look at now, it wasn't ready. So they didn't want it to go to production. Which you could look at it either way. Not maybe they should have rushed it anyway, but that's not how the Japanese do things. They're too careful. They take a long time to make decisions. And when you're a race team, you need to do it quick. And especially when you guys need something.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was hard just because, I mean, it was the reason I was losing. And then even when they came out with the following year, like thing, it had a 4-stroke engine in it, but it was a little suspect too. Remember it had those like lines in the frame and then the 2007, it got a lot better. But yeah, we tested it, in Colorado the year before or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was part of the reason I was like, okay, I'll sign here. You know, we knew we needed to go that direction. So of course you show up and like, you can't get it, but even still then, like, I was like, I'll still beat Ricky. Like, whatever. Like, I'm who I am. I ain't never lost. And boy, I had a wake up call and then it took me a long time, races to realize that it ain't you. It wasn't me, but the fans and Scott Taylor and even the guys like in Fox, like he separated that team just like it was on the team. Like you started like, dude, you bring me my gear. It's like Roger, like all of a sudden, like switching, like, oh, hey, buddy, I love you. And then like, he can't, like, it's him. It ain't the 4-stroke. It's James. You know, if Ricky could do it on 2-stroke, and man, it was tough because like everybody was believing in that. And
yeah, I remember Roger yelling at me at Unadilla when he landed on Ricky. Roger.
It was his fault.
I would say that if I was calling it now, that was a racing accident. Like you didn't jump on him on purpose.
No. I mean, anybody that thinks that is a retard.
But I remember Fox was all mad, right? Didn't they call you in?
It was Scott Taylor. Yeah, Scott Taylor. I mean, no animosity to him, but like he was protecting his boy. Like I expect Roger to do the same thing.
Well, I'm sure Ricky went to Scott Taylor and then.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand because we were struggling. But, you know, if you go back to that race, I was doing that line every single lap. Like I was in front of Ricky. Like, so I didn't know what he was. So I did the same thing. Like over, and I was going to pass him back. And then he goes on the inside and he actually breaks. He slows down like to protect the inside, which if you went inside, you just faded out to the outside. So I thought, I'm like, okay, I'm just square him up right here. And he slows down to protect it. And I'm like, uh-oh. And I jump on him. But like.
And you got the worst part of that.
No, I got the worst part of it. But that section and all that, like there was no way I could ever jump on him.
Yeah, no one would jump on somebody right there. There's no way.
Yeah, and if you even look at it, like I actually try to turn, like once I see him slowing down, I actually try to turn to go back. Like I'm like, oh my gosh, dude, the guy's slowing down, but like he slams on a brake right here, and I'm like, you can see my wheel. I turn and try to go back, but on TV, you don't realize how off camera that whole section is. So there was no way I thought he was going to go inside. And the fact is, like, you know, Ricky being behind me, he saw me taking that line. So you kind of, and that's why he braked because he was trying to block. I'm laying there and I'm like, oh, whatever. Like,
yeah, that was terrible. That was a bad day right there. Yeah. I remember that.
Yeah. And then he throws a bike and again, it was tough, but I mean, my whole life was about January 9th. Didn't help either on the RaceX cover. But yeah, there it is. It starts right there. And then, like, I remember Bone, like, he probably was hiding in the thing over there, like, laying in the cut, Genie there. Allen,
yeah.
And again, like, you know, Ricky's actually never said, as many times I talked to him, he's never brought it up.
Really?
Mm-mm. I think he knows it's a racing incident. Yeah. I remember when Roger was yelling at me, not you, Roger. Well, I'm like, I wasn't on the back. Why are you yelling at me?
Yeah.
What did I have to do with that?
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll hash it out at this table sometimes.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's totally a racing accident. That's not even as bad as Craig and
Freeze.
Big J's pissed, though.
Yeah, I mean, I would look at Malcolm.
I'd be pissed too. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
All the way around. That was not good for anyone right there. But that was not on purpose.
No, no. I mean, shoot, I didn't want to, like, I was happy to win, up there winning the race. And there was no way that I was, look at me. I'm like cuckoo. I look like, Anderson and those guys this year. I was gone on there. Like, there's no way in hell I would jump on like him, especially at that time. Like, there was a lot of like heat against me because I was struggling that year. I was missing race. I was so, and Ricky at that, he was like kind of the golden boy and motocross nations, all this stuff. And I wouldn't have done that just from the way it would have looked, like what ended up happening, the backlash I would have had. I didn't want to beat him that bad.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like that.
Yeah, it's funny how the fans get so negative quick.
Well, I think a part of it goes to, and what I realized, even speaking on the cameras and stuff, like I'm sending a message. Like, when the guys talk on television, they're actually telling you the story of how to think. Like, when they talk about Ricky and those guys are talking about Craig's situation, like, he's just speaking like, what he saw on there. But I guess being on hindsight, like, you don't realize how powerful like your message is. Mm-hmm. It's like you're telling people how to think when they're watching the race live with you. So if you say it's bad, that's what they're going to think. And now you got to try to convince them, or they got to figure it out their own self and go against what you just said. Right. So it's just, with the TV stuff and just the way, Taylor and everybody was looking, it looked like I would do it on purpose because I've been struggling. I wanted to beat Ricky all year long. So why not jump on his ass, like on there? And then, so that was a perception. But Ricky's never said anything to me about that. I mean, even the Coster, like, nobody's ever brought that up because I think they do know, there's a lot of things you can do and that's not one. And that's why I kind of went freezy like on there. Like, I think at one point he thought about like blasting this dude, but I think he came to his senses and like, nah, this ain't gonna work. But just like me and him, like, reception
still happens. Yeah. No gray hair.
I got a question. So like in this one, they got Unadilla. This is a good one. What did you think was happening? Like,
when you pulled over?
Yeah, this is when I saw
it. I honestly thought the bike was breaking at first.
Because we did have some bike failures that year. Yeah.
So you were slowing down. You're like coming to a stop right there just after Gravity Cavity.
Why? What was the bike issue earlier that year? Was there something that...
Well, it could always be something. Those things would catch rings, reeds.
There wasn't like a specific...
He didn't leave the seat off. The bolt out the seat and that thing fell off like my dad did one time, but...
I'm thinking the bike's blowing up because right here when you rolled this is when I got freaked out. I'm like, oh no, what's he doing?
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm like, what? And then when you got on the gas right here, then I'm like, oh, now I know what he's doing. I can't believe he's doing that right
now.
And then after the race, I said, I can't believe you really let him by. What are you going to do if you didn't beat him? And you said,
I had an arm pump or something. Yeah, but
oh, that's not cool. you're gonna blame it on me.
I think I was gonna say the bike on there, and then I just blew past him right here. But
yeah, you should have like rode on him a little longer if you knew.
Nah, because
you just wanted to prove it though.
It's
and take
still
off.
So gnarly because if it didn't,
no one
work
does
out,
that.
Yeah, if it didn't work out,
this is why you're good because you thought to do something like that.
Well, I mean, I didn't think about it until I was there, like on there. I'm like, I feel pretty good on this track. And this is a European track. And I knew this is the one that people were saying, like, if out of all of them, he would be like, this is when he'd get me. Yeah. And I fell in love with Unadilla, like when I came here. So I got up front. And I knew he was like in third place. Sorby held him off for a while and I like dipped out. But the only reason I didn't play with Reed, because I did have respect for him and like, I wouldn't have let him by again. Because he was still good, like on there. Like, it wasn't like I was, a guy that I can just keep doing that. Like, when I pass him back, I'm like, dude, I'm going on there. The dude might actually get me. He's good enough to do that. So, and I know if I was him, if that would have happened, I would have done everything on there. But I think he was confused. Like,
all of us. I really was too. When I did that interview, that was honest. I really had no idea what you were doing.
But explain your background and why you thought to do that.
Well, I think part of it started back in Supercross. When I I was racing the West Coast, and then he started coming in. And even though like I was crashing in the West Coast, like everybody knew I was like the fastest guy, the guy coming up, even though Preston won championship. But then Reed comes in and he's winning everything, making it look easy on the East Coast. And I think at that time, like nobody kind of expected him to be that good, even though the guy was getting like top fives in the 250 class in the West Coast before. But he kind of came out of like nowhere, and they thought Brownie and I think it was Jessamine might have been racing, and Langston, they were going to be the guys. Well, Reed just handed them, beat them all that year, except for Jessamine one race. So going into Vegas, they start pitting not the two champions, but Reed versus me, because we were clearly the fastest ones. So I took that personally, because I'm like, I'm the best. Like by that time I started winning the last, after Dallas, and I won Salt Lake City. It was first race. I didn't crash all year. It gave me a lot of confidence. And then going into Vegas, I was starting to like believe that I was like as good as I was. So I took it personally, and then I whooped up on them in Vegas on there. And then it was the same thing outdoors. They were like, oh, he's a better outdoor rider and four stroke. Then I won the first few. And even though we had Brown and Langston, it was always like Reed, like going there. And I knew out of all those guys, he was the one, even though he wasn't getting, you know, like Brownie would beat him and he had number one play. I knew Reedy was the guy. He was better than all of them. So he kept saying he kept getting bad starts. And if he just got a start, he would like beat me. Well, he yeah. did get a start and I pulled away from him, but I didn't want no excuses. Like I was like, all right, well, he can say like sorry, held him up or whatever. So like halfway through the race, I'm like, well, I'm a little halfway. I only got like 10 minutes to outrun him. I'm slowing down. So
yeah,
I let it happen. Tagline,
no excuses.
Yeah. And then, yeah, but it was always, it was nothing he did. Cause I didn't even talk to Chad. Like we never got any, like, you know, me and Brownie had animosity. He took me out of the test track one time. Yeah. But he, at Glenn Helen, he got into me trying to like, you know, the first one, like he, I ended up running in him, knocking him down, but he was trying to like, you know, bully me and all that. So we had beef, and then, but me and Chad never.
What happened at the test track with you and Brownie?
He took me out because I was like, no one. I was just good. I mean, he was on Mitch Payton, and
he skipped the Payton thing too. So
yeah, that probably didn't sit.
Yeah, I want to talk about that too, because that's one I don't know if a lot of people know about.
Yeah, that probably didn't sit well with.
No.
Well, I mean, just like him being the mechanic, like coming over to Kawasaki was being a factory rider. That was like one of the difference between, well, Honda offered me that. And then, cause I could have rode, I think Honda had a lights team.
You were skipping it.
Yeah.
Same thing. That's why you had to do it at Kawasaki, because
Honda was going to let
you go straight to the truck. And then your dad's like, how come you guys don't go straight to the truck?
Well, it wasn't even skipping it. You still have factory 125 riders back then. It was before they changed it all and they took away, because you had 24 Fonseca. He was a factory 125. Huffman was a factory Kawasaki 125 rider.
Yeah, I think in 96, though. It was a long time before that.
I mean, I think even Ward at one time, he was like a factory 125. So in 2002, Fonseca was a factory Honda 125 rider. There was still a couple of Honda and Suzuki were still doing factory like teams. So it was like, well, they're doing it and they offered it. So like, why not? And at that time, if you can go factory, there was a difference between a factory team perception, whatnots, and then the Mitch Paytons back then, you know, you had the two, or now it's, you know, Mitch Payton's 250 and then 450 is factory. You had the two and the lights. So it was like Honda, they never even brought up the other team. It was always like, well, you're a factory rider. You're here. We believe in you. So we told Kawasaki, they were like, all right, we'll do it. Well, they didn't tell Mitch apparently. And I think they were trying to get away from that. It might've been the first or second year they were trying to get away from that factory team and put all the effort into focusing on the big bike class and let Mitch and do that. Because again, perception was Mitch was second tier on there, even though he wasn't. And, you know, so they were trying to get away from that. And then they told us, you know, your factory. So Mitch didn't like that. So I remember showing up at the test track. It was a big old deal. And I don't know how folded Bruce said he handled it. Well, we showed up at the test track and they had Pro Circuit Graphics
at the photo
under
shoot,
the factory yeah. team. Like I was going to be on the factory team, but with Pro Circuit Graphics and Big J. He was like,
he never got out of the car.
No, he's like, don't you get in the car all day. Yeah. He wouldn't even let me ride it. Like he was like, no, like
you
no.
did. You did come out and ride it though.
Yeah. Because
and then we had to redo the shoot.
Yeah. Because I'm like, it's like the first time, like I'm just, I'm nobody. Like I'm the amateur kid coming up. It's not like it was the second or third year. Like, I mean, like I might not even be that good. And Rick Ash thought I wasn't that good as many times I crashed in the woods. But yeah, he was like, but that's how my dad was. Like, I mean, that confidence that he was like, you're not a privateer. You're the best. That's kind of like my mindset. And that's why I believed in myself. And it was him sitting in the car right there. Like, it was like, that's what made me who I was. So yeah, we had to do it. And, you know, understandably, like, I understand why Kawasaki did it. I understand why, like, my dad was upset, because it was the fact that, like, they still didn't tell us and we showed up and it was like that. Cause he didn't know. I remember that. And then now we had to redo it. And then history's history.
Yeah, I can see that not sitting
well. So that created ripples there.
Yeah, there was worse stuff than that that started out. So when he first did it, so when you weren't going to go to Pro Circuit, Mitch was really mad, which I don't blame him now.
Oh, but, no, everyone else that's gone through that has gone to his team.
So and he's like, I'm going to miss out on James, and I've been helping him this whole time, and then you're just going to skip me now that you get to pro? So he was bummed. And he took it personally that you're skipping because you didn't think he was good.
Well, it wasn't that. It was what Mitch didn't know was that it wasn't like we're not riding Pro Circuit. It was the fact that, like, when Kawasaki was negotiating, they told us, and also
they did say it,
we are going to give you the factory team. That's just, it's a bonus.
Right.
So Mitch was looking at it as like, I didn't want to go on his team. It wasn't even offered. And then afterwards, after we signed the deal and we turned down the Honda, then Kawasaki came back to us like, well, you know, Mitch ain't happy and we get our stuff through him. And then my dad was like, what you told us, this is one of the reasons we came here on there. So this ain't, and then that's when they were trying to figure out. So yeah, of course it made Mitch, and I don't think he didn't know that it wouldn't even offer it to us. It wasn't that we didn't think he was good, because I mean, Ricky just won 3 titles right before on that, and we knew it was. It just wasn't even an option. And, you know, so that's where it came from. And then I wanted him as my mechanic. So it became awkward, like, well, he's going to build a bike where here in Pro Circuit, whatever it was. So that's how it started.
Yeah, I actually worked at Kawasaki and I was going to go build at Pro Circuit once a week. To be there to make it so that I, because they didn't want me to just build it at Kawasaki, because then it's not like I'm there. So we were trying to figure out a way to make Mitch happy, and it was not working. And then still try to like make James and his dad happy, which wasn't happening. So we weren't making anyone happy. And the communication was the problem, like always. You did come to the photo shoot not knowing that. They wanted to have Pro Circuit Graphics, so he looked like everybody else. And it blew up. So then we ended up taking those graphics off, reshooting. Then we needed Mitch because the transmissions were blowing up.
Yeah.
So then we had to call Mitch because he had transmissions made from X-Track that were like the best ones ever. And we're like, hey, we need to get transmissions or we can't race Anaheim. And he loved it, like mad, but loved it. And he actually did give them to us, which was cool. He did hold out on, like, when we were doing all the testing,
pipes.
He wouldn't give us pipes. We had to use other brands. FMF ended up being really cool, so we used FMF all the way up till it was getting time to go racing. Then Mitch gave in and gave us stuff.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't that FMF was doing a bad job either. It just was that now we needed to look like we couldn't do this to our partner.
Yeah.
Which, like, in the end, when Fisher did other stuff with the FMF energy drink and all that caused problems, like, that was dumb. Like, going through this little thing with you, I knew what they were doing was not the right thing.
Yeah.
Because you're partners. You can't do that to people.
I mean, I got fired without knowing I got fired or being replaced. That's why I was, like, I didn't leave Kawasaki. Like, they didn't rehire me. And it was because of, like, you know, it was Fisher, like, on there. He never told me, like, on there. So it was a tough deal. But, like, yeah, there was a lot of stuff that people don't understand behind the scenes. But Mitch, he knew, like, I mean, I think he figured out how, like, upset, like, we were. And you know, you can tell by shock at people and him and my dad talked. And Mitch is, you know, he's a stand-up person. Like, he wants to win just like everybody.
How are you and Mitch now?
We're fine. Like, we were always fine.
He was awesome. Yeah, he was only mad at the beginning, but he was fine once we were racing. Everything was good. When he knew you were that good, he was fine. He respected it. He was good to us.
Yeah.
It came around.
From when talking to Mitch, and he might have just said that to us, but I think it was more, at one point, he found out, like, that it was what we were told on there about the factory team. So I think that helped him, you know, just be like, you know, like, I'm mad at Kawasaki and I'm like, hold off, but I'm not going to hurt James, you know, like, at the end of the day, like, you know, like, I want him in my product too. And he knew, like, you know, wasn't us that was doing it. We weren't saying he was bad. It was just the way it was. And at that time, like, that was just kind of, you know, some things, it's rather just let it go and see what happens than rather just say it up front and, you know, from upstairs. So it ended up working out. But it was definitely, it was tough. And I remember, like, damn, like, Brownie's bike is fast over there. And we had to get our stuff from, you know, Mitch and stuff. And then that's when Rick really started, you know, putting some, you know, effort into the 125s and making that thing good. But yeah, it was, so I think from then Brownie was their guy. At Pro Circuit, so we always had like a little bit of animosity because he was that guy, and you know, narrative was James doesn't think this team is that good, whatever they want to think. And so Brownie was he was always just kind of like a bully per se. He was always that way towards everybody, so I was the one guy that wasn't like, you know, whatever. And so he took me out one time at a test track for no reason, because they were doing something motos, and it might have been my fault. I think they were doing some motos, and I came by and passed all of them anyway. And he got pissed and he just took me off. And I remember Mark Johnson telling him that, you do that again, like, who do you think's gonna lead? James on there. And that was it. And so Brownie,
I liked Mark then.
Oh, like, I liked that. Yeah. But yeah. I mean he could have hurt me, you know. It wasn't like I was messing with him. Maybe I was, but he knew, like, you can't do that. Like, I mean, it was a cheap shot. Took me out. And then he ended up riding for Yamaha Detroit next year. So I guess he wasn't that happy, but I stayed. But yeah, it was good. yeah, but there was some good times, but you were there, dude. Like, you were there the whole time. That was cool. Means a lot. What do you think is probably the most difficult time, like, outside of, obviously we struggled in, I guess, 2005, but like us, our relationship, just, I guess, as a mechanic, I mean, we know what happened at JGR, but as far as racing, like, the most,
I didn't really have any bad moments really with you. I mean, I didn't feel like there was any. You might have some, but I felt like we always got along pretty good. Yeah, your dad yelled at us a few times, but it was never at me. Like, actually, one time I did mess up on the bike, and I told you guys what I did. It was like at Steel City in practice, because every time we used to do Saturday practice, race Sunday, and every time I'd have to rebuild the bike. So we take the top end off, check the rod, look at the reeds, and I drop, there's a little plastic thing that goes on the carburetor hoses. And when I was changing the reeds, that fell in there.
Yeah.
So then when you were riding practice, it like sucked it in there and like held the reed open. So we had to push it off.
Yeah.
And then I went and took the bike apart, which I easily could have said what it was, but I showed everybody what it was and told you guys I messed up. And that was like the only time personally that I messed up.
Yeah,
now the bike did have problems here and there, but not anything that was from me. That was the thing from me.
Yeah. I never had any issues with us. And even like, you know, that I do remember that. And even when my bike blew up at, Southwick, and you know, the two times it blew up at in 2002,
that was the cylinder stud.
Yeah, I remember we were on the gate, and I did the parade lap, and I come back, and I think that's when you used to have to check to see if the gas is on. Like, I used to always do it just out of habit.
Well, if you look at it, it's cut off. Yeah. Like, if you don't turn it on, you're not getting it on with your fingers, because we shaved it down too.
Yeah, I think I started, like, the way I grip my bike, I used to like move it on there, but nonetheless. I remember looking down and the thing was like vibrating, like just sitting on the gate.
Yeah. Cause the cylinder stud broke.
Yeah.
So then I'm like on the radio trying to see what I should do, because you can't change a cylinder stud that quick. And on practice bikes, they have done it and they last. And I think it would have lasted at any other track except for Southwick. And that place, it got bikes always. Yeah. That's where you test that thing to the limit.
What'd they tell you to do?
Race?
Yeah.
Just run it.
I mean, we're
done. Because there's nothing you can do. And we didn't think that was going to happen. But then it was funny because after that race, those were titanium studs. And the Mitch is like, you guys were running those? That was stupid. I haven't ran those for years. You guys are idiots. I could have told you that.
Yeah. Must be the factory team. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But yeah. We wanted all the baddest stuff on there. Like even that magnesium carburetor we ran at Glen Helen.
Yeah.
They were like $10,000 a piece.
Yeah. Triple clamps on there. Those are magnesium triple clamps. We spent some
money on those bikes.
We did the old GP trick. We had the little fairings on the
carbon
radiator. Yeah. Those things are like sick looking. And, you know, it was like just our hubs were different. Like it was a factory looking motorcycle. But I think that what made it a little bit difficult or I guess nervous was that we just had a DNF the race before. Remember at, High Point. I remember I hurt my knee in practice. I don't know what I did. Tore some meniscus.
What was the DNF from?
So first race, goes 2-1 at the first race, and it's 2002. The next one is the mud race at Hangtown. Go 1-1-1. So going into High Point, I hurt my knee in Saturday practice, like bad, and we're going to the hospital, so on Saturday. Or maybe it was Sunday or whatever. I just remember leaving. Like I wrote one practice and leaving, going to the hospital. You probably remember this. And coming back right before the first moto. Like didn't ride second practice. I couldn't even, like my knee was swollen up. And didn't even know if I was going to race. He had the bike. And then so I end up racing my knee. And I end up getting fourth the first moto. And then the second moto, I felt better just because I was loosened up. And then I was in fourth battling with Ernie and my bike blew up. So we just DNF. Chad went 1-1. And then the next race, the first moto is when I'm looking at the gate and the thing's spinning. And I was out front winning that moto.
Yep, went up in smoke.
Yep, thing blew up. But luckily for us, Chad knocked his shoulder out that moto. So it was like a tie. We didn't lose any points. And then I won the second moto. And then I won everything else after that, except for one moto.
And the titanium studs were out after that. Mm. Never again. Learned our lesson.
So.
Yep.
What was easier, wrenching for him or managing him?
Wrenching for him.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Yeah, because now he's in the corporate office now. Like it wasn't.
Yeah, it's a different relationship, really.
Yeah. And like even
he thinks I'm against him. When I was a manager, I never was against him.
Yeah, but I think that's why you made a good team manager, because you see it from all sides. You see it from the racer side. You see it from the sponsor side even, and the management side.
Yeah, it's funny he said that. Even I thought you were that way, even though I knew you wasn't that way. On there, I just knew when you're in that position, you got a corporate, like you got to, you're like in Bruce, like it's like you got to say no. And partly, I actually think I wanted you to work for me when I came to JGR. I think that was a conversation like, well, can you like wrench, like be my mechanic? I know you do your thing, have Patty or whoever build a bike, but I wanted like him on there. And I just thought, like, you know, coming off at L&M and then, you know, trying to get back to where I was, like he would help me get there, and he did. But I think when it was more, we went into the relationship wrong, you know, like we're going into it before we even get together, the Suzuki stuff happens. So we already went in there thinking about it. He caught me. They were texting another girl and I just caught him. He didn't do anything yet, you know? So we went in that. So it was always, you know, and then with my history with Yamaha, it wasn't that hard to fall back into the same thing. But, you know, the biggest thing, like me as a racer, I just kept like I would like go to the gate, whatever, like knowing, oh, man, this, I can't do it. And then like soon as those bikes started up, dude, I forgot all that. And that was the scariest part, because like you just get hurt like on there. And I knew I would get hurt on there because I couldn't, as a person, I couldn't not give it all my all. And, you know, so, you know, not going back on that, but it was tough. So I think all that being said, like, you know, of course, like you can ride Suzuki's. And like, when you look at the team, it was him and Coy, you know, so of course I'm going to look at that. Well, those are leaders. Those are the guys that's telling me, and I'm not able to do it, but I never not trusted a guy. Like, I mean, he had bosses and stuff. It's just, you know, we all wanted something, we couldn't get it, so somebody has to get blamed, you know, for it. But, you know, that didn't stop anything. Like, we, everybody tried, like, it, like, we tried as hard as I wouldn't have done anything, and no matter how it ended up, like, I gave it everything I had, you know. And you know, those guys did the same thing too. So it was never a lack of effort or a trusting or whatnot. It was just, it didn't work out, you know. It didn't work out, and so yeah, we went ways. I do, you know, feel bad, or it does suck to, like, know, like, we just wasted, like, years and like, for what? But that's kind of life in general. Like, I wish I would have done a lot of different things. Like, I would have saw the world the way I see it now, you know? But I don't think anybody does. It wasn't done on purpose. It's just, you realize, like, so childish. Like, why the hell you was even mad at the guys? And, you know, again, just like the motor concept thing and the Sessoms thing, like, he didn't know the Yamaha and all that. And I wasn't even mad at whatever they were talking about. I never was riding that thing again. So, you know, he could put whatever on that bike, motor concept, and I wasn't going over there either. So, but again, you know, he says one thing, it gets in the magazine, and I remember reading it. And like, man, like, why do you say that? But, you know, if I was mad, I was already mad. That didn't make me mad. So.
Yeah. It's all good. Live and learn. Maybe we'll have somebody else fix their problems a little earlier than we did.
Yeah.
We're all good.
Yeah. Well, like you said, and I truly believe that it's made us, all the problems and things that we went to makes you really appreciate where you're at today. You know? Yeah. So I don't think, like, not the fact that we went through that and it's childish or whatever it was, like, it makes me really appreciate you being here today and, like, to be able to have these conversations. And, like, I'm actually glad we did. Like, yeah, so
same here.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break. And then you got something, I guess you got a little list of question bones list or some memories. Let's see if we can get into that. So we'll be right back. All right, guys, that was part one of episode 7 with Mr. Albrecht. You want to see the part 2, tune in next week and we'll get it for you then. Talk soon.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.